Do these views, for which he's now apologised, mean he deserves to forfeit the privilege of being a British citizen? Is this another heart versus head issue? At 11, according to President Trump, Putin wants to see Ukraine succeed, which is presumably why he's bombing the bejesus out of it. And at 12, does having a posh accent help you get on in life? And do you ever modify your accent?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a British-Egyptian political activist has apologised for social media posts appearing to call for violence towards Zionists. Ala Abed El-Fattah says his remarks have been completely twisted out of their meaning. Jemima Steinfeld from the Index on Censorship told LBC she condemns his social media statements.
In jail in Egypt. He was in jail for peaceful protests, for doing things like, I mean, the latest one for 5 years was because he reposted about torture in Egyptian prisons. El-Sisi is an authoritarian. He has been escalating his attacks, and that is why Ala was in jail, and that is what we campaign against. We don't campaign for perfect people. If we were to campaign for perfect people, we wouldn't be campaigning for very many.
The Conservatives are calling for him to be deported and to have his citizenship revoked. Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine. Elena Halushka from the International Center for Ukrainian Victory told LBC there are some serious sticking points, though.
I haven't heard anything clear. One thing that is really missing, there will be no effective peace process. And that's pressure on Russia. Because if the talks aren't resolving the underlying problem, Russia's desire to restore their empire, then there won't be peace. And we do not see any wish of the President Trump to put even minimal pressure on Russia.
The US president will also host Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu later. A man has been charged with murder following the death of a pensioner in North Wales. The 68-year-old died on Christmas Day after being found in a property on the High Street in St Asaph. Forecasters say we should prepare for a bracing start to the new year. Two amber health alerts have already been issued, covering the northeast and northwest of England. Temperatures are expected to fall to around -4, with some snow predicted in the northwest later this week. And cricket's governing body has described the pitch in the fourth Ashes test as unsatisfactory. The ICC says it favoured the bowlers too much, with the match in Melbourne finishing within 2 days. England won, but remain 3-1 down to Australia in the five-test series. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most, with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
At Tesco Mobile, prices are frozen, but our deals will keep you feeling nice and cosy. Get our unlimited data sim for just £24 a month with club card prices, saving you £72. Plus, you'll get a £40 Tesco gift card too. And that price is frozen for the duration of your contract, thanks to club card prices. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 1st of February. Club card and 12-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past 10 on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all week this week, so I'll be with you until Friday. Sorry about that if you're going to be missing James. I know he's got a very loyal band of listeners, and quite right too. But Joe says, what a treat to hear me at this time of day. Well, takes all sorts, Joe. Thank you very much. Right, I want to start off today by talking about, I think, a really quite important news story, because on LBC over the last few years, we've carried interviews with the mother and with the sister of a man called Ala Abd El-Fattah, who was imprisoned in Egypt for 10 years. He's a dual citizen, British-Egyptian dual citizen. And ostensibly, I mean, he was being held under trumped-up charges, and the British government, successive British governments, kept lobbying the Egyptian government to release him. I remember hearing an interview which Andrew Marr did with his mother. I then remember interviewing his sister myself. Really heart-rending. I mean, really. And I mean, if you'd said to me at that point, or said to Andrew, and I think James probably interviewed one of them as well, if you'd said to us, did this man deserve to be released? We'd all said unequivocally, absolutely. Trumped up charges. It is outrageous that this man, a dual citizen, British citizen, is being kept in jail in Egypt. And I would still stick to that. I mean, I think that the charges against him were trumped up. Anyway, he was released and he was sent back to Britain, I think on Christmas Eve. Now, the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary all issued tweets welcoming him back. The Prime Minister said how delighted he was to see him coming back to Britain. And then a whole series of tweets were uncovered that he had issued back in 2010, 2011 and 2012, which were, frankly, outrageous and disgusting. I mean, here's one. He says, yes, I consider killing any colonialists and especially Zionists heroic. We need to kill more of them. And so it went on. There are plenty of other similar ones. And you think, well, how is it that the Prime Minister of this country and the Foreign Secretary and the Deputy Prime Minister weren't made aware of this? How was it that Priti Patel, as Home Secretary, gave this man citizenship in 2019? I mean, it beggars belief that no one actually went into his social media history. He'd even written a book where he talked about some of the things that he'd said. Now, he's issued an apology subsequently. I mean, I've got it here. This was released earlier today. He says, I am shaken that just as I'm being reunited with my family for the first time in 12 years, several historic tweets of mine have been republished and used to question and attack my integrity and values, escalating to calls for the revocation of my citizenship. Looking at the tweets now, the ones that were not completely twisted out of their meaning, I do understand how shocking and hurtful they are, and for that I unequivocally apologise. They were mostly expressions of a young man's anger and frustrations in a time of regional crises, the wars on Iraq, on Lebanon and Gaza, and the rise of police brutality against Egyptian youth. Well, okay, up to a point, mate. I don't know how sincere that apology was. But there, of course, there are now calls for him, his citizenship to be revoked. Now, it was granted apparently partly because of the European Convention on Human Rights, which the British laws changed their interpretation of it in 2018. So they didn't have this clause where somebody has to be of good character to get British citizenship, unbelievably. So that wasn't part of the decision to give him citizenship. Now, I don't know whether this went up to ministers in the Home Office at the time. Priti Patel was the Home Secretary. But obviously, given recent events, you'd like to think that that couldn't happen nowadays, but I think it probably could. Well, the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, was speaking to my colleague Henry Riley this morning on LBC.
This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship, and you can do that. Your Stephen Gethin's a minute ago was completely wrong to say you can't strip citizenship. You can, where someone is a dual national, and this man is a dual national. He's got Egyptian citizenship and British citizenship, and you can strip him of his British citizenship under the 1971 Immigration Act on the grounds he's not conducive to the public good. If I was Home Secretary, I would do that today and deport him back to Egypt. I believe, firstly, people should not be unfairly imprisoned in places like Egypt, and it's good that the Egyptian government pardoned him and released him. That's a good thing, but that is different to letting him into this country, and we should not be allowing people into this country or allowing people to stay in this country who express racist, extremist, anti-Semitic views or support for violence. So this man should be kicked out, but so should anybody else who is not a British citizen or who is a dual national, who expresses racist, extremist, anti-Semitic or pro-violence views. We don't want those people in this country.
Is this a heart versus head issue? Because if I judge my heart, yeah, I want this guy kicked out. I absolutely do. I don't want anybody in this country, or I certainly don't want somebody to be given British citizenship if they're anti-Semitic, if they slag off the British police, the British state. He called for Downing Street to be burnt down. I mean, if that on its own doesn't warrant anybody being chucked out, I don't know what does. So, I'd love to see him ejected from the country. But my head says, well, hang on a minute. He was given British citizenship. You can't just revoke British citizenship on a whim, particularly when had the people who were granting citizenship at the time been aware of these tweets, they probably wouldn't have given him the citizenship, or you'd at least like to hope that they wouldn't. Can you really look at these things retrospectively? Now, of course, we did withdraw the citizenship for Shamima Begum. What was it, back in 2015? She was that young girl, she was 15 at the time, went to Syria and supported ISIS. Now, at the time, people said, oh, well, she's dual citizen of Bangladesh as well. Well, it turned out she wasn't. And I've changed my mind on that, because at the time I did think that she should have the citizenship withdrawn, but I've changed my mind on that now, for reasons we can go into a bit later if you want. So I want to ask you whether you think it is right, whether we should just sort of automatically jerk our knees and say, yep, withdraw citizenship from him, or maybe we should think a little bit more deliberately. 0345 6060973. Emily Thornbury joins me now, Chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee and Labour MP for Islington South and Finsbury. Emily, very good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yeah.
Now, what's your view on this man? Because, I mean, it's embarrassing for the Prime Minister, Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary to have welcomed him back in such laudatory terms, and they've got a bit of a political problem now. The easy thing to do would be for the Home Secretary to withdraw his citizenship, I guess, but do you think that should happen?
So, I think everybody has been campaigning to get this guy out of Egyptian jails. He was for 10 years being thrown into jail, came out for a couple of months, be thrown back in again. And he was campaigning for democracy and for human rights in Egypt. So people around the world, presidents and prime ministers, you know, were all campaigning for this. And then he was given British citizenship. And so we had particular responsibility for him. The Conservatives campaigned for him to be released as much as we did, and finally he was released. And of course, his continued imprisonment in Egypt, leaving aside the kind of human rights abuses of him being kept in jail, was also a major blot, you know, a major problem for us when it came to improving our relationships with Egypt, which is important not just for things like trade, but also really important when it comes to working out a future for Gaza. You know, Britain has to be able to work closely with Egypt, and this continued to be an issue. So, you know, everyone was pleased when he was released and didn't know about these tweets. Now what do we do? So can I just say, the first thing was that about, you know, on what basis was he granted British citizenship? Because you're right that there are lots of people who are granted British citizenship on a basis which is discretionary. So Priti Patel would have had to look at whether or not he should be given British citizenship if it was granted on a discretionary basis. But I think it probably wasn't. I think he was probably entitled to British citizenship, like you and me, because his mother was born in the UK. And so he just applied for it and was given it. And so they didn't go anywhere near a politician. There wasn't any discretion exercised. And so, yeah, he's now got two nationalities, but, you know, his British citizenship is his British citizenship. And the problem is, right, is that we've got a shadow Secretary of State for the Home Office who just hasn't bothered to look all this up, or even to ring up Priti Patel and find out whether or not she did exercise her discretion to give him citizenship.
To be fair, you don't know that.
Well, he says he doesn't know. So, you know, but he still doesn't stop him, you know, marching around the radio stations kind of spouting off. But that isn't the worst of it. The worst of it is him now saying that his citizenship can be taken away if it's not conducive to the public good, and he's relying on the 1971 Immigration Act. But the 1971 Immigration Act doesn't apply to British citizens. You can't take away someone's citizenship on the basis, right? Section 6 of the Immigration Act says that it doesn't apply to British citizens. So,
okay, you know, so how was Sajid Javid able to withdraw Shamima Begum's citizenship?
Right, because of a complete, not the Immigration Act, not because of it's not conducive to public good, a much higher standard, which is that she was a threat to national security. So the question
you could argue that with him, couldn't you? given some of the views that he's expressed.
It would be stretching it, wouldn't it? I mean, like, tweets that were issued 15 years
burning
ago.
Burning down Downing Street?
Yeah, listen, I mean, like, horrible stuff. But is he actually a threat to national security? I mean, it's like, can you take away British... I mean, you shouldn't be taking away people's British citizenships willy-nilly. Right. I mean, people say things and they deeply regret them. Should they lose their nationality as a result? I mean, I do think that it should only be taken away in the most extreme examples. And I just can't see this getting through the courts. I can't see the court. I mean, I think the courts would say, you know, you have to do this in accordance with the law. And this is stretching the law far too far. And where will it ever end if we start taking people's nationality away because we don't like the things that they say?
Emily, thank you very much indeed. That's Emily Thornberry, Chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Labour MP for Islington South and Finsbury. So, simple question, should his citizenship be revoked or not? Do you accept what Emily's saying, that you can't just take away someone's citizenship on the basis of a few unfortunate things that they said a few years ago? I would argue these are more than unfortunate. I mean, they are clearly anti-Semitic. They are clearly a danger, or you could interpret them that he's a danger to our national security. So I think there are grounds, but I think she's absolutely right. It would get bogged down in the courts for probably years to come. And what do you make of Chris Philp's comments that he is the Shadow Home Secretary? I mean, when I sort of heard him call this man a scumbag, I thought, well, that's the sort of thing that you might call him if you were down the pub having a drink with your mates. Is it really the sort of thing that a Shadow Home Secretary should go around saying in radio studios? Maybe I'm being a little bit overly sensitive there. 0345 6060 973. You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 16 minutes past 10.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Your happy new year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 18 minutes past 10 on LBC, so we're asking whether you think that this man should be deported from Britain. He's a dual citizen. He holds British citizenship and Egyptian citizenship. The complicated factor here is, though, if you deport him to Egypt, where he's just been released from prison, I mean, that would be, should we say, a brave thing to do for the new Home Secretary, wouldn't it, Shabana Mahmood? because I suspect that she has burnished her credentials as possibly the most right-wing Home Secretary since Jackie Smith back in 2009, and I'm including Suella Braverman and Priti Patel in that list. I suspect that she may well be considering doing this, but what do you think the implications of that would be, and do you think she should? David's in Surbiton. Hello, David.
Hi, Ian.
Hello.
I've always called up in support of Shamima Begum not losing the citizenship, and I would do for this man as well. And the reason for that is because I believe in equality under the law, and that means that if you have a parent or grandparent who comes from a different country, then you shouldn't be treated differently than the likes of me, whose parents and grandparents all come from Britain, which means that I can be, anyone who doesn't have that can be treated differently. And that's an inherently racist policy, and it's a very dangerous precedent to set. And although we can, you know, demonise certain individuals based on really horrible things which they've done or said, we shouldn't be allowed that to set a precedent, because we can see this in full effects right now at the moment in the States. For example, there's an Irish woman. Well, she's a US citizen now, but she was an Irish citizen. And about 8 years ago, she wrote a couple of bad checks, and now she's being deported. There's loads of examples of this happening in the States right now, and that's the dangerous precedent that we could set in this country if we allow this to happen. Because if two people commit the same crime, they should both be treated equally. And there's no way that anyone in this country should settle for anything less, unless they're a proud racist.
Right, let me play devil's advocate here. What about the concept that British citizenship is something incredibly valuable, it should be cherished, it should be earned, and if you become a British citizen, you're awarded citizenship by the government of the day, and then it's discovered that you've said things or done things which are prejudicial to the national interest. It could be argued that your citizenship should be forfeited in those circumstances, because you have done things or said things or said things which mean that you shouldn't have been given it in the first place.
What about if your granddad came from Pakistan and all the rest of your family were all born in the UK?
Well,
person should be treated differently? Because that's what's happening.
No,
what's happening in the United States, and that's the point.
No, I don't care what's happening in the States. We're talking about what's happening in this country.
That's the president that you would set.
No, I'm playing, as I said at the beginning, I'm playing devil's advocate to put a different point of view to you, saying that British citizenship is something that has to be earned. And if you do things which mean that you're doing essentially things against the British state, then you should have, maybe the government should have the right to withdraw that citizenship from you. Now, the complicating factor here is that his mother was born in the UK.
Well, this is the point. This is the whole point. The president that I'm trying to point out to you is that you only need to have one grandparent that was born outside this country that you could lose your citizenship. And you're saying, well, just if you offend the state. Well, based on what? Surely if you committed a crime and you're a British citizen, then we're supposed to lock you up and punish you, and you're supposed, you know, and that's the system we're through. Not just, oh, you've upset the government, you haven't done this or that, so we can just, like your guest said, take away people's citizenship willy-nilly. I mean, what's the president that it says for exactly? Surely it must be that if someone's committed the crime, then it's down to the state to punish them. Not just say, oh, we don't like what you said, so we can remove your... This inherently racist system to have.
How is it racist?
Of course it is, because you have to have a heritage outside of the UK to be treated differently under the law. That takes away equality under the law based on race.
Honestly, why do people have to bring racism into every debate in this country? It's outrageous.
It's based on a heritage.
No, it's not.
You won't be treated like that, probably.
What about if someone was Canadian or Australian or white? I'm not arguing that people should be discriminated on the basis of skin colour, for goodness sake.
Heritage. On their heritage. Taken away equality under the law based on someone's heritage.
No, it's nothing to do with heritage.
That's inherently,
honestly.
Of course it is, because you need to have a grandparent or a parent outside of the UK.
But what's that got to do with skin colour?
It's heritage.
No, what's it got to do with skin colour?
Heritage.
Answer that question.
My children...
Answer that question. No, before you go on...
Heritage.
No, before you go
you
on...
You need to be...
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, you need to have your parents and all your grandparents to be from the British, be born and bred and British. That's going to be pretty much exclusively white British people.
Not necessarily.
Mainly.
Yeah, mainly you're right. That doesn't make it racist. Don't bring racism into everything. It's ridiculous.
Heritage. It's based on heritage. And it's that makes it inherently prejudiced. If you don't like the word racist, it's prejudice. And I believe in equality under law, which is not prejudice, because we treat everybody equally. We don't treat someone differently because they got a grandparent that came from Poland or wherever.
Going back to Shamima Begum, though, I mean, she clearly did commit a crime.
Well, punish her then. Bring her back and punish her.
I agree with that.
Don't treat her differently because she's got a family that comes from Bangladesh, even though she's never been there. That's racist.
Well, obviously, you're going to bring race into everything, aren't you, David? So let's move on. Pauline's in Southampton. Hello, Pauline.
Hello, it's Paulina, actually. I'm a dual national. I am Polish, born in Poland, and I got my British citizenship about 23 years ago. Through residency, so I came to live here and work here. I'm a secondary school teacher, and I've worked since I got my work permit in the UK. When I became a British citizen, I had to pledge loyalty to the UK and its laws and its customs. It happened at a ceremony when I received my British citizenship. I believe that if somebody is not respecting the laws of the country and is not loyal to the country, they should not have the country's citizenship. So therefore, I think that this person, the Egyptian person, Al-Fata, who is clearly breaking the laws and not being loyal to the UK, should not have British citizenship, despite having some sort of a relative connection to this country.
Does it make any difference to you that he's apologised for what he said in these historic tweets?
It's good that he's apologised. But those things have been said, and I was actually talking to my partner this morning saying, I work in a secondary school, and our students sometimes get into fights or display violent behaviour, racist behaviour towards others, and they get expelled. And even though sometimes if they're high on the consequence ladder, if they apologize for what they've done, they still lose their place at our school because we do not tolerate racism or violent behavior towards staff or other students. So this is at much higher level. If somebody said very bad things against the people of Britain and against the authorities of Britain, you know, the fact that they've but also he's apologized, but then he said that the words were twisted. So it, for me, that's not a full apology. For me, that's sort of, I'm sorry, but I didn't really mean those things. So I think the intention was there and it should not be tolerated because it could backfire.
So you believe that he should have his citizenship withdrawn and be deported?
If there is a law to withdraw his citizenship, yes. And deported because, from what I've heard, he's not going to face any more prosecution in Egypt because he's been pardoned. So he could live a safe life in Egypt. He might be a threat in this country to other people.
Well, I mean, I've got his full apology here. I won't read the whole thing out because it's over 500 words long and it would take too long. I mean, on the face of it, it's very well argued. It seems quite convincing. But do you not think there's a dangerous precedent that could be set here where you sort of withdraw someone's citizenship almost retrospectively because of things that he said like 6 or 7 or 8 years before he even applied for citizenship. Isn't it incumbent on the authorities who gave him citizenship to have uncovered these tweets before that?
I wouldn't say that about somebody who only had one citizenship, but because he has got his primary citizenship as an Egyptian, then obviously he has got that to fall back on and he can safely return to his country, where maybe such views are more tolerated. But I think the negatives about keeping him in this country where he poses a threat to the authorities, the legal system, and other people of different religions and ethnicities could really be a step backwards for many people and could be a danger.
Paulina, thank you very much indeed for your call. A couple of texts here. Andy says, I think the Conservatives should keep quiet. They gave him citizenship and campaigned for his release while those tweets were out there. Joinal says, is this the man whose mother went on hunger strike? Yes, it is. It's exactly the same man. So keep your calls coming, 0345-6060-973. Do you think anyone should ever have their citizenship revoked, regardless of what they've done? Or is it different in this case because he is a dual national with Egypt? And the citizenship was only granted, 6 or 7 years ago. Does that make a difference? Or do you think, no, he said these things, they are reprehensible, they're clearly anti-Semitic, they are clearly, what's the phrase, prejudicial to the public good? I don't think anybody could argue that they weren't that. 0345-6060-973. You're listening to LBC. It's 10:30. Let's get the latest news headlines with Lottie Morley.
A British-Egyptian political activist has apologised for old social media posts appearing to encourage violence. Ministers are being urged to strip Alaa Abed El Fattah of his UK citizenship. He was freed from an Egyptian prison last week. Donald Trump claims Ukraine is a lot closer to peace after hosting its leader in Florida last night. Volodymyr Zelensky has restated his demand that any deal must respect Kiev's borders and laws. And a man has been shot dead by police responding to a car crash in Norfolk. It's believed he was one of two drivers involved in a collision in Thetford last night and was thought to be carrying a handgun. LBC weather, feeling chilly across the UK and staying dry for most, a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last, subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
At Morrison's, mix and match on 3 packs of the best party food and get one free. Serve up fancy New Year's evenables, like lobster and prawn mac and cheese bites, prawn coconut curry donuts, and then do your croquettes with tomato chilli jam.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
Majority of stores and online. Prices may vary at Morrison's daily. 176 to 304 grams. £6 each. Offer ends 31st of December.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:33 on LBC. Graham says, if we ship this guy out, I'm very much hoping that Nigel Farage, or as he puts it, Farage, has a foreign grandparent. I'm assuming that's a joke, Graham, but on the other hand, I'm not sure it is. Oh, well, then Graham follows it up by saying, well, that's clearly not going to be read out on an Ian Dale show. I'm very liberal in what I read out. I always say it's this fallacy that radio presenters, a lot of people seem to think that we only ever want people to ring in or text who agree with our views. Well, how boring is that if everybody just agrees? I'd much rather have people phoning in and messaging me with views that challenge my own, because then you can have a really good debate. Isn't that what speech radio is all about? Jo's in Wandsworth. Hello, Jo.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I can only really echo the sentiments of your last caller when, you know, she sort of gave her story of becoming a citizen, but also said, rightly, in my opinion, if you flout that agreement that you made to be a citizen of this country, then perhaps you should risk losing it. And this El Fattah guy who's just come back to live here has been very vocal about what he really thinks. He might have said sorry. I don't believe he said sorry. I think he's the story, perhaps, that he's been found out and this has come to light because he knows it could risk, you know, his citizenship here. But, you know, really, the greater public good should have been thought of. And I cannot believe that nobody knew about this because they have MI5 and MI6 at their fingertips. So if they don't know, then I give up on the whole system, to be honest.
Well, it is a little odd that these tweets have only just emerged in the last few days. I think some of them had been deleted, but of course you delete a tweet, but you know that somewhere it will be archived and somebody will be able to find it if they really want to. But it does seem odd that when he was given citizenship that these things weren't discovered then. But maybe because it was one of those which, as Emily Thornberry said, it didn't involve politicians' discretion. It was just automatically given because his mother was born here, so it didn't seem to be very controversial. That's the most logical explanation, I suppose.
Well, Benny, are you seriously telling me that anybody who's automatically entitled to it automatically gets it, no matter their past, no matter what they've written or said? Bearing in mind, we jailed somebody for some tweets here for nearly 3 years that was a British citizen, is a British citizen, sorry.
Yep. Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not an expert enough on the immigration system to know exactly what happens. I've always gone from the viewpoint that if you want to become a British citizen, you should have to earn it and you have to abide by the rules to keep it.
Yeah, of course.
But then again, let me put this to you. This is a WhatsApp message that's come in, which is exactly on this subject from Ben. He says, Ian, you say that British citizenship should be earned, but that isn't true. For people born here, it's a birthright, as with Kemi Badenoch, whose mother came here specifically to give birth and gain citizenship. You're right on the first bit. I don't think you're right on the second bit there, Ben. If someone comes as a migrant and then qualifies for citizenship and then commits a crime, I suggest that this is different, but this person's citizenship is gained through birth. With reference to being a threat to national security, Boris Johnson put the son of a KGB officer in the House of Lords with literally power over UK lawmaking. That's from Ben in Brighton. Well, I mean, some interesting points there, Joe, don't you think?
Yes, but I mean, again, that's not to say that it's not questionable that he was put into the House of Lords, this son of a KGB agent. I don't think it should be automatic. It should be discretionary, I think, in all cases, because if you don't look into a person's background, then we could have this that's currently in the, you know, this individual situation time and time and time again. It shouldn't just happen at the computer says yes.
Well, no, maybe it shouldn't. But you have this ridiculous situation now where you don't have to be, quotes, a person of good character to get British citizenship. Because the British courts interpreted something from the European Convention on Human Rights in 2018 in a different way. And I think that's outrageous. I think, why would you give citizenship to somebody who you didn't think was of good character?
But also these things, even if they have become a convention, can be looked at again, surely. The law is constantly being revised and updated and repealed and all the rest of it. So these things should be too, especially when, you know, cases like this come to light.
Joe, thank you very much. Dan is in Bristol. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Ian. So I'm just thinking that this thing is sort of potentially quite dangerous. My parents came to this country in the mid-50s. My father was a member, you know, part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
He gained his British citizenship. What does that make me? I mean, I'm a first-generation immigrant. I happen to be white, so nobody, I've never suffered from racism, except people sort of query my name. So we get down to this thing about character, good character. What the hell does that mean? I mean, does that mean that if I disagree with the government, a particular government, as seems to be happening in America with Donald Trump, you know, I'm suddenly an enemy of the state, and I could have my citizenship withdrawn according to the government of the day. So I just think there's something that we should be very careful about here. And relating to somebody, the other thing I would say about this chap is at least he had the decency to apologise, unlike a certain Mr Farage, who seems, there's been enough said about him, he hasn't had the decency to come out and apologise himself. So maybe we should be looking into his background and consider that he's not a fit person of a decent character, considering the amount of damage he's done to this country. But that's, that's my rant for today.
Well, you've ranted in a very calm way, if I may say so.
Thank you very much.
Look, I think the slight difference with Nigel Farage here is that his whatever remarks he is alleged to have made, which he denies, they were made when he was a teenager, not an adult. So
I don't know how old this chap made these comments back in 10, 12 years ago. How old was he? I have no idea.
Actually,
how
that's a good point. I'm sure Eleanor can look his age up, but I think he probably was an adult at that time. I think he's in his early 30s.
Fair enough.
But I may be wrong. Dan, thank you. Michael is in Kentish Town. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Ian. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thank you very much. I just want to say, I do think that what he said was wrong. I'm not here to make a contestation of what he said. To try and say that he was right. However, I think he should be punished under English law. I think he should be punished for it. But not. I think it's very easy just to take away someone's citizenship. And also, I might add, when does that end? You know how many bad things people say to each other at work or in banter at the workplace? If you were to penalize everyone who said a bad thing at workplace, half the people would be out of the country.
Well, I agree, but then you have an Irish comedy writer being arrested at Heathrow Airport for saying hurty things about trans people. Now, they've apologised for that, but I think people can... I mean, he said some very bad things on Twitter. We might say, well, actually, they could be considered unlawful, but, I mean, I don't think we should waste police time in trying to sort of bang him up for that 10, 15 years on.
Yeah, I know, I agree. But I think Shamina Begum should be punished under English law here.
So do I.
And also, Mike, for example, may I ask when the killers of Stephen Lawrence have been arrested and they're not expelled from being British citizenship. They're in prison here. You know, people have done bad things. They go to prison for it. Let them. I just think revoking citizenship is really can lead to very unintended outcomes, I might say, you know?
Okay. All right, Michael, thank you. This chap is 44 years old. Well, he looks good for 44, I have to say. These comments were made in 2010 and 2011, so he would have been in his early 30s when he made them. So we can't... He has no excuse for making them. He wasn't a teenager. I think... Possibly those of us that have been involved in internet, in Twitter spats from time to time, and I include myself in that, you do say things that are possibly rather more extreme than what you actually really genuinely think or would have thought in a calm moment. But they were so awful that they can't really be excused. But nor would I advocate him getting a knock on his door this morning from the police saying, now, about these comments that you made 15 years ago. I just think that would be utterly ridiculous. But there is a difference, though, isn't there? If you are born a British citizen, And, I mean, just being born here doesn't actually confer that right on you, but if you are born a British citizen, where your parents, your grandparents are also British citizens, I think that that is a slightly separate category of citizen than somebody who's been awarded British citizenship for whatever reason. I'm not advocating a hierarchy of citizenship, but I think that you have to accept that there are differences. Let's go to Kai in St Albans. Hello, Kai.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, so it's a total racist
policy. Sorry, it's Kaz, isn't it? Not Kai. Hi.
Yeah. I think it's a racist policy that's targeted towards the freedom of speech of ethnic minorities. You and me could say the same thing online, and you wouldn't receive any repercussions for it, whereas I
really? The things that he's been saying about being anti-Semitic and wanting to burn down Downing Street, you think you or I wouldn't have any repercussions from that?
No. I'm talking in general, yeah? This is a specific case, and regardless, you want to set a precedence across the whole of the UK where people can lose their citizenship on the basis of what they say, which means that if you say it, you can get away with it, and if I say it, I can't.
You're attributing views to me which I haven't expressed and don't have.
Well, we can't pick and choose a law for some and not others. So do you want this policy to be implemented across the UK or just on specific people? Or revoking somebody's citizenship?
Well, I haven't actually said that I do think his citizenship should be revoked.
So you don't think it should be revoked?
Well, I said at the beginning of the programme that I think this is a heart versus head issue, where I can absolutely understand where people will sort of have a knee-jerk reaction and think this is outrageous, of course his citizenship should be revoked. But when you actually deploy your brain on it, rather than thinking with your heart, you might well come to a very different conclusion because of the consequences of doing that. Now, I realise that's slightly sitting on the fence, but...
So you are sitting on the fence slightly, is what you're saying.
I am sitting on the fence slightly, because I remember when the Shamima Begum case happened,
which is racist, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think it was racist at all.
Well, why is somebody who's gone out to fight in Ukraine not receiving the same level of justice by losing their citizenship, and she has...
Well, I don't know of any cases in Ukraine of this happening, because fighting in Ukraine, you're actually fighting against a Russian invader, and you are essentially fighting for British and European interest by doing that. If you go to Syria to fight for ISIS or support people who are fighting for ISIS, they are a prescribed terror organisation, so there is a clear difference.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
It's got nothing to do with racism. Again, you're bringing racism into this for, I think, unjustified reasons.
The reason why I'm bringing racism into it is because there's multiple examples of people who are going out to Palestine, IDF soldiers, and then coming back into society here. The same with Ukraine, and nothing's brought up on it, whereas if it's a person of colour who ends up in Syria or who says some comments abroad, then it's picked up by the media and blasted across mainstream.
Well, I don't think you can compare those conflicts. There are clear differences between them all. But it's a point of view, Kaz, and you're entitled to it. Thank you very much for your call. More calls in a moment. It's 10:46.
I'm Nick Ferrari. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
It's not a racist at all to have concerns about your children, one of whom's going to secondary school soon.
If not being a racist means my children are subject to being murdered, going about their daily business, I'll quite happily say that I am.
Is there much point continuing this conversation? Because you don't know where a bridge starts, you don't know where it ends, and you don't know how much it costs.
Nigel Farage came up and claimed you had an obsession with him.
No, that's not the case. I am deeply concerned about reform because I think they will toxically divide our country.
You mentioned Mr. Farage five times.
You are mildly obsessed.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable, and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights.
get ahead for summer with just a £25 deposit per person for a limited time only. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Astro National Protected. £25 deposit available from 19th of December to 12th of January, subject to availability and conditions.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze Million Pound House draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by New Year's Day, you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by New Year's Day at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:49 on LBC. Right, let's continue with your calls on this Egyptian dissident who's apologised for tweets made 13, 14, 15 years ago. He was made a British citizen in 2018. Many conservative reform UK politicians are calling for him to be deported, even though he was made a British citizen under the Conservative government when Priti Patel was Home Secretary. Peter's in Leeds. Hello, Peter.
Hi, yeah, I think you need to apologise for one thing that you said, because you said that if anybody had said they would use violence against the police in their youth, then they should basically be have their citizenship taken off them.
I didn't say anything of the sort.
Whilst you did.
No, I didn't.
When you run your programme, you said that.
I did not say that.
You did.
Well, we can go around in circles however much you like, but I've got nothing to apologise for.
While Nigel Farage has been away earning his £135,000 for his 4 hours work, Andy Allen, who was his reform councillor in Northumberland, was quoted as saying, "I'd shoot Starmer myself if I had a weapon and the opportunity." But Nigel Farage hasn't apologised, and we haven't got rid of his...
Well, Nigel Farage has kicked him out of his party for saying that.
Yeah, Farage... Right, Jack Anderson was an advisor to Farage, and on his social media, he said that if the Germans had won the Second World War, it would have been better for Europe and the world. Jack Anderson was promoted.
Have you got a list of these that you're going to go through? Because I've just told you that.
Yes, I've got one more.
How exciting is that for us all?
I know you and the fellow on Radio 5 are trying to be Farage's press secretary.
Hang on. I've always
Andy
said I'm.
Allen,
I, hang on.
It's not
Andy Allen. It's John Allen. It's not Andy Allen. It's John Allen. So get your facts right, mate.
Well, the reputable. Well, Andy Osborne, a council for Cambridgeshire, described the children in care that I look after as being downright evil. That was the first step of Hitler's regime in 1939.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when you bring Hitler into it, you know you've lost the argument, don't you?
No, when I bring Hitler into it, I know that I'm comparing one leader with another.
Oh, for goodness sake. You're comparing Nigel Farage with Adolf Hitler. Get a grip.
I'm comparing the 10... If you look at a book which was published, The Nazis, 12 Things to Learn from History, and if you look at the contents, and how Hitler won... Farage is using every technique.
Why would he then chuck this man out of his party?
Because the fact that he lets him say it at all, or that he was a... He
How
can
he possibly have any control over what some jumped-up little local councillor says about something? How would Nigel Farage be able to control that? As soon as he found out about
because
it,
he, had
he
all
chucked him out of the party.
To a meeting saying that this was the way forward for the country.
He chucked him out of the party. What part of that don't you understand?
Look... You think that you are the most intelligent person
no,
in the
I don't.
World.
No, I don't. I don't at all.
You're not. You're a Farage follower.
No, I'm not a Farage follower. I've said countless times, I have said countless times that I do not support Reform UK. I will not vote for them at the next election. So yet again, you're wrong.
Well, I'm glad I've converted you. Because
you haven't converted... Oh, my goodness. You haven't converted me anything. In fact, if anything, you've maybe think I'm wrong to say that. Because people like you, who just constantly compare a perfectly
people
legitimate...
Like
yeah,
who am I?
You are somebody who likes to compare perfectly legitimate politicians to Adolf Hitler. And you're a disgrace for doing that.
Are you saying that Farage is a perfectly legitimate
politician? Yes, I am, because I absolutely am.
When he's earning £135,000 for a four-hour week.
I've no idea what you're talking about.
As well, right? He has...
Well, if that is true, and the reason that you know that is because it will be declared in the Register of Members' Interest, so it's clearly above board, so... I mean,
he's
seriously.
He's working for a firm selling gold bullion, and he's getting £135,000.
Is that a crime?
It's a crime if he's not saying
anything. No, it's not
anything.
A crime. It's not a crime.
It's not a crime.
It was a crime, he would be tried for it. He's registered it in the Register of Members' Interests, and I think you've graced our airways long enough, Peter, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I've graced them, but you don't. And it's a pity that they've got you to replace a decent commentator on that's usually on this day.
Oh, how we laughed. Peter, thank you very much for your contribution. Let's go to Herbert. I think the last caller was a right Herbert. Let's go to Herbert in Hounslow. Hello, Herbert.
Excuse me, are you dissing my name, Dale?
Oh, are we going to go down that road? If you're offended by that, I do apologise.
Thank you. And by the way, I can only echo the thoughts of the last caller.
Go on, then.
It's a joke. It's a poor attempt at humour. Now, can I get back to the actual discussion in point, which I understand was the different gradations in citizenship. Is that right? Potentially?
I'm not advocating different forms of citizenship, but I do think that if somebody is awarded citizenship, then clearly that is slightly different from somebody who inherits citizenship because they were born here and their parents were British.
Okay, well, let's consider this, if I may. My father brought me over to this country when I was 3 years old. I'm now 66, so I've been here pretty much all my life. I've got no recollection at all of India, none whatsoever. My younger sibling was actually born here, so clearly he has rights because, you know, he's got British citizens because he's born here. I have British citizens awarded to me. Does that make him more British than me, according to you?
No, I don't think it does. But I think it is different if somebody comes here as a dual...
How many generations do you want to go back, Mr. Dale?
I've got no prescription about generations.
Well, what were you talking about then?
I don't know, you tell me.
Well, if I understood what you're talking about, you know, I've had no need to actually call in. Are you talking gibberish, sir? You really haven't thought through what you're thinking.
Is that really your contribution, that I'm talking gibberish?
Is that really your response to my point?
Well, I'm not sure what your point is.
Well, exactly. I'm not sure what your point is, sir.
Oh, for goodness sake. Robert is in Gateshead. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Mr. Dale.
Hello.
Nice to speak to someone who's got a lot of common sense and doesn't suffer fools gladly. I was listening to the United States. You told the person to go to hell. Which would not be me.
Well, that was a Putin apologist, and I certainly don't apologise for that.
Yeah, so even-handed, it's unreal. So the thing is, all this stuff that people's conflating ideas and all that racist this and a racist that, the point is the man's done a 500-word apology. He was living in Egypt at the time where the police were torturing people. They were taking people off the streets. It was a military regime, and he was going off it, sending tweets and everything, which he could, but he's had a 500-word apology. And the thing now is, you can't just do what they're doing in America. They need 5 years of your social media to see if you can come into the country for a holiday.
Yeah, which is outrageous.
And the other thing is, certain people are completely ignoring the fact he said he's sorry, he's apologised, he's a completely changed man now, but nobody's believing this. How come people get let out of prison after they've done murders and all sorts of horrible crimes, and they've done that time, and they've apologised, and they've done service? But the thing is, let the courts decide.
Well, I don't think this is a matter for the courts, do you, really?
Well, the thing is, all the politicians that's backing him up and saying, well, I want him in the country, he's done his time, he's been a prisoner of the Egyptians. The thing is, if we do send them back, what if the regime in Egypt changes and they put him to death?
Well, as I say, this is not something that I've personally advocated. I think there is an argument to be had. I can see why politicians are bringing it up. But you have to have cast iron reasons for withdrawing someone's citizenship. And it's very rare that there's any case that is sort of absolutely cut and dried here. Robert, thank you very much indeed. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to return to the subject of Ukraine, because Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky have both said that progress has been made to end the Ukraine war. However, Donald Trump came out with an absolute corker in the press conference. The look on Zelensky's face was a picture when he said that Vladimir Putin wants Ukraine to succeed. Yep, really, he did say that. Why is it that you think that Donald Trump consistently thinks the best of Vladimir Putin? And is he really the best man to broker peace in the Ukraine war when he's consistently taking the side of Russia? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, a British-Egyptian activist has apologised for historic tweets which appeared to call for violence. Ala Abed al-Fattah says his remarks, which encouraged attacks on police and Zionists, had been completely twisted. He was recently released from prison in Egypt. Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp told LBC Ala has no place here in the UK.
He expressed racist, anti-white views. He described white people as dogs. He said he hated white people. He's expressed anti-Semitic views, calling for Jewish civilians to be murdered. He's called for Downing Street to be burned down. And he called for the British police to be attacked. This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship.
Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky say they've made a lot of progress towards a peace deal for Ukraine, but they say some thorny issues remain after their talks in Florida. Alina Halushka from the International Center for Ukrainian Victory told LBC there are some serious sticking points.
I haven't heard anything clear. One thing that is really missing, there will be no effective peace process, and that's pressure on Russia. Because if the talks aren't resolving the underlying problem, Russia's desire to restore their empire, then there won't be peace. And we do not see any wish of the President Trump to put even minimal pressure on Russia.
There's a warning that flights from regional airports could get more expensive in the new year. They're facing big increases in business tax after the Chancellor's budget in November. Manchester Airport is thought to be one of the worst affected. Forecasters say heavy snow showers are on the way for parts of the UK. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for snow and ice for parts of Scotland. A cold health alert is also in place across the northeast and northwest of England. And tributes are being paid to the French film icon Brigitte Bardot following her death at the age of 91. President Macron has described her as a legend of the century. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. so don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past 11 on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all this week. Now, I want to turn to the subject of Ukraine because there was a meeting yesterday at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, Donald Trump's palatial home. Got lots of gold in Mar-a-Lago, it seems. Vladimir Zelensky turned up. He met with Donald Trump. They talked about the prospects for peace in Ukraine. And it seemed to go, should we say, rather better than some of the other meetings between the two of them that they had. They held a joint press conference after the meeting. But I'm wondering what was really achieved, because Donald Trump is very keen on saying that President Putin wants peace. Isn't it strange, therefore, that in the 72 hours before their meeting, President Putin ramped up all of the drone attacks, the missile attacks on Kyiv? Many people were killed. Lots of buildings were damaged. A lot of the attacks were on blocks of flats where people lived, a war crime in itself. And yet, Trump still says that Putin's in favour of peace. If he was in favour of peace, he would willingly have a ceasefire, which he has consistently refused to have. And every time that Donald Trump says that, oh, we're very near a peace deal, Putin wants peace, it just doesn't happen. And that's not because the Ukrainians are the ones who are blocking peace. It is clearly the fact that President Putin is the block to peace. And yet Donald Trump can't see it. And I have yet to come up with a reason or an understanding of why Trump is taking this view. Because every time, at every point, Putin has let him down. And yet he always gives Putin the benefit of the doubt. Let's listen to this question put by a journalist to President Trump at the press conference yesterday with Zelensky in Florida.
In your conversation with President Putin, did you discuss what responsibility Russia will have for any kind of reconstruction of Ukraine post an agreement?
I did. They're going to be helping. Russia's going to be helping. Russia wants to see Ukraine succeed. Once, it sounds a little strange, but I was explaining to the president, President Putin was very generous in his feeling toward Ukraine succeeding, including supplying energy, electricity, and other things at very low prices.
It's a joke, isn't it? It is such a joke that Trump can say that with a straight face. He says Russia wants Ukraine to succeed, and they'll supply them with energy at a cheap rate. When they spent the last 4 years trying to destroy Ukraine's energy infrastructure, it is beyond a joke for Trump to say that. And the look on Zelensky's face as he said it really said it all. Putin doesn't want Ukraine to succeed. All he wants from Ukraine is for it to become part of Russia again. Now, maybe in an alternative universe, that could happen someday. It could happen by negotiation, but it's never going to happen by conquest. And that is where I think, again, Trump fails to understand that it is up to the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian nation, what they want to do with their future. And that's why they've held out for nearly 4 years now. Putin thought that he would win this war in 3 days, maybe 3 weeks. And he's got nowhere in terms of taking extra territory beyond the odd village or so in the Donbass. He certainly hasn't got anywhere near conquering Ukraine because of the resolute opposition of the Ukrainian people. Now, I don't know what a just peace looks like here. Just to whom? And is Donald Trump capable of being the interlocutor between Ukraine and Russia? I don't think he is, because he's clearly taking Russia's side the whole way through. Still is. And I think Zelensky knows that, but he has to go along with these ridiculous charades of meetings with Trump. So what does a just peace look like to you? And do you think Trump should continue to try to play the peacemaker? I mean, he wants to have it on his CV as well. Yet another war that I've brought to an end. Well, if he does manage to bring it to an end in a way that Ukraine finds acceptable, well, kudos to him. Doesn't look like that now, though, does it? 0345-6060-973. Kira Rudik is a deputy of the Ukrainian Parliament, who's leader of the Kholos Party. Kira, good to talk to you again. What did you make of this meeting yesterday between Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky?
Hello, Ian, and thank you so much for having me. It's very hard to assess the result of the meeting if we do not see the result. I know everybody exhales with after seeing that the meeting didn't go bad, because there is always a chance that President Trump will get emotional and President Zelensky, and things will go south. And it did not happen. However, does this handshake and saying that things went very well, does it really change the situation here on the ground? Does it really do anything to people here in Ukraine who are without electricity, without running water, without heating? The short answer is no. If we are talking on a very practical note, we will see if something is getting out of this when we will take a look at the delegation that Russia provides to like this next round of discussions or whatever will happen. It's very likely that nothing will happen, and that for another like 2 or 3 weeks we will not hear anything, and Ukraine will continue saying we are ready for peace, and Russia will continue saying that they are preparing something. Because if you look at it right now, it's all going Russia's way in the matter that they want to escape sanctions that President Trump threatened them with, and they are successfully doing so. And there is no reason for him to say, well, I will impose sanctions right now, because Russia is saying we are ready to negotiate. This is very upsetting. That's true. However, I want to comment on something that you said earlier, Ian, that Putin wants to see Ukraine successful and help rebuilding. I see a reality where this is true.
Can I make clear? I did not say that. Donald Trump said that.
Donald Trump said, okay, yes. Well, I see a reality where this may be true, because Russia never gave up on a plan to politically take over Ukraine. And this is why the elections is so important to them and so important to President Trump. They are not so important to people here on the ground, but for some reason, external forces are pushing Ukraine to have elections even in such a hard time. And Putin already announced that they have 5 to 10 million people with Ukrainian passports on Russian territory, which cannot be true, but is showing you that they obviously have a plan to interact with Ukraine's elections if they will happen, and to put additional pressure to that, to have a political presence here, and then perhaps to have a pro-Russian candidate at some level. And at that point, we will go back to 2014. And in this world, Putin will be interested in Russia-controlled Ukraine to be successful, because it will be, again, part of Russian Empire.
And why doesn't Donald Trump understand that?
Perhaps he does understand. I think we are very centered on Ukraine, and we should be, and Europe should be. But President Trump was very clear that his attention is to fight China. He's still in the illusion that you can drag Russia out of China, away from China, and weaken China this way. We do not believe that may happen. President Trump may have a different opinion. I think Putin promised them a collaboration in Arctic, trying to figure out ways to get additional rare earth minerals that Russia possesses. There could be different things. But the truth is that we cannot say that President Trump is on Ukraine's side. He's trying to be a mediator, a negotiator. However, without additional pressure on Russia, I do not think that anything positive for Ukraine is possible here.
This phrase, a just peace, now everybody's going to have a different view on what that should mean. It does seem as though President Zelensky has shifted ground a little bit in terms of what he might be willing to consider. But for the bulk of the Ukrainian people, I mean, if Zelensky came back from one of these meetings and said, look, we've got to accept that Russia is going to is not going to give up its claims in the Donbass, what would the reaction of the Ukrainian people be to that?
It will be a very negative reaction. Basically, that's why President Zelensky is not agreeing to give up on Ukraine's territory. First thing is because then he will be politically done. And second is because he simply doesn't have the rights, according to Ukrainian constitution, to give up anything. And so his agreeing to that will mean nothing. This is why we have heard all these questions about referenda and conducting it and then making changes, etc. It's very worrying for all of us that these discussions like this are being held, because it's very obvious that Ukrainian people wouldn't accept it.
Kira, it's always a pleasure. I'm going to wish you a happy new year. I hope 2026 will be the year that finally this war comes to an end and that Ukraine can justifiably claim to have won it. Thank you very much indeed. That's Kira Rudik there, a deputy in the Ukrainian Parliament. She's the leader of the Holos Party. James is in Gillingham. Hello, James.
Oh, hello, Ian. I hope you and your partner had a very nice Christmas.
Thank you very much. Yes, I hope you did too. What would you like to tell me?
Always nice to speak to you. You talk about what would a just peace look like in Ukraine. Well, a just peace would be a complete Russian withdrawal from Ukrainian sovereign territory and the return of Crimea back to Ukraine. That's a just peace in my book. But it ain't going to happen because the Russians will not do that. And I fear that Zelensky will be slowly worn down by Trump, who seems to be an apologist for Putin. And he always was, you know, even when in his first presidency, he seemed to like the company of totalitarian dictators rather than he did from proper democratically elected leaders.
Which is a weird personality trait on its own, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. But you know what he likes? He likes strong men, okay? He sees Putin as another strong man whom he can do business with. Zelensky, I'm afraid he doesn't see him in the same light. And, you know, it's going to be difficult for Ukraine because Russia are not going to give up on its red lines, and Ukraine will not want to cede any territory. So I don't see where this is going to go. I think in the end, Trump will just walk away from it and Ukraine will have to fend for itself.
It is becoming a war of attrition, isn't it? Where one side conquers a village and then 2 weeks later the other side wins it back. And it's a bit like the First World War in some ways, in that you can't quite see the end point. And although, I mean, it's not going to be long before this war will have been going on for longer than the First World War. So I don't see where the end point comes. I don't see how Zelensky can survive if he did make concessions to Russia. And I don't see how Putin survives if effectively the Russian people think he's lost this war.
Well, I think the problem with the Russian people, they've been so brainwashed by Putin that they'll virtually believe anything he has to say. And of course, there is no opposition to him in Russia, because whenever there's a smell of operation or opposition, that they're just gently done out the way. You know, he is a dictator, and you know that's how dictators work.
Okay, James, thank you very much. 0345 6060973. When Trump says he thinks Russia wants Ukraine to succeed, how do you interpret that? And what is a just peace for particularly Ukraine? But how could Putin sell a just peace, in inverted commas, to his own people? It's 17 minutes past 11.
LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, the home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means mum and dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Macy, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
On booking.com, it's easy to book your holiday home. And thanks to flexible cancellation, there's no more.
Lodge is all booked, folks. Mm. Oh, Kaz and Rob are coming now. Oh.
With booking.com, you're free to be flexible.
Oh, easy.
So you can go from home to holiday home with no dramas.
Bigger place booked.
On booking.com, finding a holiday home is easy.
And relax.
Booking.com. Booking.com. Yeah.
Terms apply. Available on selected properties.
Lost World Play Barn. Dragon Castle Children's Farm. Jumping Pillows. Wallabies. Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn. Quarter Pillar. Rowing Boats. Owl Displays. Meerkats. Honey Pot. Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
90 minutes past 11 on LBC. Liz says... Putin has something on Trump that I'm 100% sure is fact. There can be no other reason for his capitulation to Putin. Well, it is an interesting theory, this. Nobody's ever going to be able to prove against it. But I wonder whether anybody can prove for it. There are all sorts of rumours about Trump's visits to Moscow in the 1980s and all sorts of different things, but nobody's ever been able to prove it. So what does a just peace mean? And do you think that Putin really does want Ukraine to succeed? That's what Donald Trump thinks. Let's go to Esri, who's in Barry. Hello, Esri.
Hello there, Ian. How are you this morning? I hope you had a great Christmas.
I did. Thank you very much. What would you like to say?
Yeah, what I'd like to say is that this year, I think, is all about opening up the world to flag planting again. I think that, in reality, Trump, we already know, wants Greenland. We know that just this week that they basically said that they wouldn't rule out military force to take Greenland. We know that there's threats against Canada being forced into becoming America's 51st state. So all of this force, this double teaming of Zelensky by Putin and Trump is about forcing land concessions, and that will once again say to the world.
But why is that in Trump's interest for Ukraine to make land concessions to Russia?
And I'll explain that now. So basically, by making land concessions, by allowing. Putin to take land by force, it then allows the United States to do the same also under Trump presidency.
There's a flaw in that argument, isn't there? Because Trump has made great play that he, in his first term as president, he didn't use military action to invade anywhere, and he hasn't done in his second term. He wants his legacy to be the president that ended wars rather than started them. So I don't think that matches this. I mean, there's no way that Russia, that America is going to invade Greenland, for example.
So why this week have they got a special envoy, and why have they already, and have they said they don't rule out military force?
Well, no country ever rules out military force.
So that is using the bully boy tactic of overwhelming
Trump is a bully. I completely accept that. But look at his record. He's been in power now for 5 years, the first term and the start of the second term.
Yeah.
And he hasn't invaded any other country. And has given no real indication that he actually plans to. I mean, Venezuela. You've got a stronger point if you mention Venezuela there.
No, I was going to mention Venezuela as well, but because he's already said that that's our oil. That was our oil. They basically stole our resources from us. Let us not be under any stretch of the imagination here that if Zelensky in Ukraine is forced to give up significant amount of land, that then puts flag planting back on the table. That puts colonialism back on the table. It also rips up any international law in regards to war crimes. And we can say, oh, Putin will still get charged or he'll face justice one day. We know that's not going to happen. That's just kicking the can down the road mentality. And if those things happen, because Europe's being weak right now and not standing up, because we're too busy going cap in hand to the Americans all the time about our defense. And that basically opens up Europe to be impacted. So, what about Georgia? What about Moldova?
So your basic theory is that if Russia wins in Ukraine, that gives Donald Trump license to invade other countries. That is your basic theory.
That's my working theory, yes. Mm. And you may think that's ridiculous.
I do.
But that's your right. But the fact of the matter being is that they've already threatened to annex Canada this year. He's already threatened. He wants Greenland.
When has he said he wants to annex Canada?
Beginning of his presidency, when he kept on referring to Trudeau as Governor Trudeau.
Yeah. He did that to insult him. It wasn't meaning that he was going to annex Canada to the United States, which would be impossible anyway.
Well, in that case, why isn't he silencing his attack dogs, the likes of J.D. Vance and others, who keep on talking about making Greenland and Canada part of the United States?
But just because they say that, that doesn't mean to say that there's going to be some sort of military invasion of Greenland, does it?
So what should we then be looking at this in?
Because it would be one NATO state invading another.
And they clearly don't care about NATO, because ultimately we know that Donald Trump's promise to his MAGA voter base was to get the United States out of NATO.
Well, again, he didn't say that.
Well, he absolutely did say that.
No, he didn't say it. He has never said, "I'm going to pull America out of NATO."
He said it during his campaign.
Well, I'd love you to provide the evidence for that, because I've never heard him say it.
I'll email it after the call.
Feel free.
Absolutely. How shall I address the email so that it gets straight to you?
ian@lbc.co.uk.
Not a problem.
I shall eagerly await it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely will.
I completely accept that he, in many ways, has undermined NATO. He's never seemed to have any great affiliation to NATO. I completely accept that, but I don't recall any occasion where he's overtly said, "I want America to come out of NATO." In fact, I've heard him say quite the opposite. Esri, thank you very much. Right, brace yourselves. Nick in Ilford's on the line. Nick, hi.
Hi, Ian.
Hello. Or Nikolai, as you've been dubbed on my programme the other day.
Yeah, I know, it's good, isn't it? in LBC famous. Unfortunately, I don't think there can be a peace deal. I've always said that these so-called peace negotiations have always been smoke and mirrors, because both sides have red lines that are insurmountable. Russia's made it very clear that there's certain land that they want, and they're not willing to step back on that red line. Ukraine initially made it very clear that they don't want to let any land go. With the Russian one as well, they've absolutely said no peacekeeping forces on the ground. With Ukraine, they've made it very, very clear initially, we don't want to lose any land to Russia. They've stepped back a bit on that now, in that they've said, we'll give up some land, but only to like a international authority, like a borderline that has.
Well, I think they've been talking about an economic
Yeah, that's right. I had the word in my head, yeah. And I just think neither side will step back from those red lines. So, unfortunately, I think this can only end on the battlefield. I don't see any other way around it. It's why I've always found these peace negotiations a joke. It's why at the end of it, it's always nothing's happened. And I think it would be the same Trump or not. It wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, you've achieved a first today in that I haven't been able to disagree with anything that you've said in the first 2 minutes of our conversation.
Merry Christmas.
But look, I mean, it is true, though, that I mean, I do agree with you that I can't see where there can be an agreement. And I don't, this is possibly where we are going to disagree. I don't think Putin's ever wanted there to be a peace agreement, because he's always assumed that the might of the Russian war machine will be able to triumph over Ukraine. And I mean, that may, he may be right on that in the end. So he will think, well, why on earth would I come to a peace agreement when I can win?
I mean, I think the thing that Trump said yesterday about Russia wanting Ukraine to succeed isn't really true. I don't believe that Russia wants to take the whole of Ukraine, but I do believe that what Russia wants left is effectively a rump state that will be a buffer zone between them and the West. And I think that's where it will eventually go. But it won't be a peace deal. I genuinely wish there was a peace deal. I don't believe there's one out there that either side will step back on very certain red lines that are genuinely red lines.
I'm not sure where you get the buffer zone thing from, because if you look at the geography, Belarus is the buffer zone, isn't it?
It is, but a lot of people put a lot of importance on the likes of Finland joining NATO, and there was a couple of other countries after the war started. Russia's never been worried about those countries. Russia was only ever worried about two countries, Georgia and Ukraine. For them, both red lines were crossed, and that's when they took action. And I think that's why we need to be careful about red lines. Countries have them for a reason. If you look at America with the Monroe Doctrine, they have very clear red lines. We saw that with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I believe we're seeing that to a certain degree with Venezuela. That's not about, it's sort of about oil, but it's more about oil with China and the refinery that it wants to open up in the region. This is all big politics, and these countries aren't going to step back.
Okay, Nick, thank you very much indeed. Well, that is the first time that Nick's ever called into my show, and I couldn't really find a lot of holes in his argument. But I'm sure it'll happen again soon. 0345 60 60 973. What does a just peace look like in your book? Or do you agree with me that it's very difficult to define what a just peace would look like? It's very difficult to see how Zelensky could ever accept any loss of territory. And it's very difficult to see how Putin could accept withdrawing from the Donbass and indeed Crimea. So where does it go from here? And why is Donald Trump seemingly still in Putin's pocket? He seems to genuinely believe that Putin does want peace and that he's the man that can bring it about. I don't think Donald Trump can end this war. I wonder whether he's slowly coming to the realisation that he can't. What do you think is going to happen to Ukraine in 2026? You're listening to LBC. I'm Ian Dale. It's 11:30 and Lottie Morley has the news headlines.
The Conservatives are calling for a British-Egyptian activist to be stripped of his citizenship after historic tweets emerged. Ala Abed al-Fattah has apologised for old tweets which appeared to call for violence against the police and Zionists. He was recently released from detention in Egypt for charges of spreading false news. The Kremlin has agreed that peace talks with Ukraine are in their final stage. Donald Trump met with his Ukrainian counterpart in Florida and went on to say an agreement was 95% done. And a man believed to be holding a handgun has been shot dead by police in Norfolk. Emergency services were called out to a collision on the A11 in Thetford last night. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife, and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable, and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Are you ready to go electric? With a complete lineup of rewired iconic cars, including the all-electric Capri, Explorer, Puma Jenny, and Mustang Mach-E. Buy before the end of December and you can get a free home charger, up to 10,000 charging miles, and 5 years free service plan. Go electric with Ford. Book your Ford test drive today. T's and C's apply. For more information, search Ford Power Promise.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy, Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:33 on LBC. A rhetorical question from a texter coming up here. Is Ian Dale the thickest presenter on our airwaves? Blimey, you'd have to look pretty hard to find another that thick. I leave everyone to judge the merits of that text. We're talking about Ukraine. What do you think is going to happen to Ukraine in 2026? Do you see any prospect of some peace agreement between Ukraine and Russia? And is Donald Trump really the man to make it work? Dave's in Liverpool. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Ian. Great to hear you on the radio this week.
Thank you.
I don't think Donald Trump is the man who's going to achieve anything at all. It's a complete waste of time. It's the whole circus is just going around in circles, you know. I think there's a chance this war could end tomorrow if NATO had the guts to admit Ukraine. And I can't understand why Trump is so against Ukraine being in NATO. I mean, if you've got, you know, other countries who aren't quite, pro-NATO supporters, even though they're in NATO, why the hell can't we have Ukraine in NATO?
Well, do you remember when Finland and Sweden applied to join NATO, Turkey tried to veto both of them joining and in the end relented? But I wonder whether you would have a country like Turkey or maybe Hungary or one or two others that would actually veto it.
Yeah, it's a possibility, but, surely in circumstances like this, Ukraine should have every right to be a member of NATO. Maybe it's got more rights than some countries already in NATO, you know. I mean, Trump's own interest is what suits him. He's not interested in peace or democracy. He's only interested in what he can get out of this. And it's just insulting to people in Ukraine to have to go through these ridiculous scenarios with Trump. You know, he needs to be removed from the whole peace sort of deal and let Europe do the negotiations, you know, because Trump is just so self-centered.
But I don't think that Europe doing any negotiations is actually going to get us anywhere, because all of the European countries, if you take Hungary and Slovakia out of the equation, otherwise the whole of Europe is united on this. They've all imposed sanctions. And I can't see Putin really wanting to negotiate with whether it's the European Union or a sort of looser collection of European states. I just can't see it happening.
Well, yeah, possibly not. But why do you think Trump's so against Ukraine being in NATO? What's going on there?
what one can only speculate. I mean, as our previous caller said, I mean, Trump's never been a fan of NATO. By the way, he hasn't emailed me yet with this proof that he said he wanted to withdraw. Maybe I'm being very old-fashioned on this, but I've always gone from the premise that if it should be up to individual countries as sovereign states as to which international organisations they apply to belong to. Now, doesn't mean that that organisation has to accept them, but I don't think you can have a country like Russia vetoing Ukraine wanting to join NATO or indeed the European Union. I mean, it eats at the fundamentals of sovereignty, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, who are Russia to say Ukraine can't join NATO? It's, you know, like they're trying to get control of them already. I mean, just one other quick point, Ian. I think we as the West need to sell to the Russian people that we have no beef against them. We want to live in peace with the Russian people. We're not a threat to the Russian population. You know, we don't want this fight. And I just think if we could try and get that message through a little bit more, you know, I know it's difficult. But, I mean, the average Russian person needs to know we do not want any war with them.
And how do you make them know that? Because there's no free media in Russia. It's not as if we can have European leaders going on Russian media, or indeed anybody going on Russian media, sort of saying anything that isn't in favour of Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, I mean, that's the block. I mean, we must be able, in this day of this fantastic technology we've got, be able to sort of get some sort of messages through to the general population.
But nobody's been able to do it so far.
No, but I haven't seen much interest from Western politicians to get that message through. It's all war, isn't it? We need to try and get the message through that, you know, we do not want a war with Russia.
Well, anybody that says they want a war with Russia, I mean, needs to sort of put a cold towel over their head. Nobody in their right mind would want a war with Russia, but the best way of having a war with Russia is not to prepare for one. And we've seen that so often in the past that if you don't prepare for war, you're much more likely to experience one. And that's why I think it is absolutely incumbent on all European nations to act. Keir Starmer has said this in words that I didn't think I would ever hear him use. But he said we've almost got to be acting as if we are at war. Now, I don't think this government has got any idea of the resources that are going to be needed to devote to preparing for that situation, but it's better to prepare for something than not.
No, absolutely, and that's why if NATO was to stand up and say we're taking Ukraine into NATO, then there's your message. That's a message of strength, isn't it?
Well, peace through strength. That was always the watchword for NATO in the 1980s, and I think it's still relevant today. Thank you very much, Dave. Jamie says, he makes them sound equally intransigent. Yes, Russia does want the whole of Ukraine. He wants the Russian Empire restored. He's an imperialist. This guy sounds like a Russian apologist. Do you agree with that position? Well, I don't agree with any position from somebody who's a Russian apologist. All I was saying was that when Nick normally phones, I'm assuming you're talking about Nick here, when he normally phones in, that's exactly what I accuse him of, because that's normally the point of view that he takes. On this occasion, I thought most of what he said was fairly unarguable, but maybe I'm just having an off day. Ken is in Tavistock. Hello, Ken.
Hello. Hi. I'd just like to think that in 2026, I think not much is going to change, and I think there's some very clever cookies in the American State Department and the CIA and the various other organisations that look maybe 30 years ahead at what may be best for America. Not for Europe, but purely for America. And they drip-feed information into Trump and his cohorts. And if you think what might be best for America in 30 years' time, it would be to split America from China, because China will be America's biggest threat. And the way to split America from the way to split Russia from China is to be friendly with Russia. And the way to do that, I think, is to try and appease them on almost everything that will come up in the next 30 years.
And so you think that's an explanation for Trump's position now?
I think it is. And the other thing that lurks in the background, and it's the same with Greenland, is that Russia has huge amounts of minerals underneath the ground. billions and billions and billions, as has Greenland. And at the moment, it's very expensive to extract them from the ground. But if you think 30 years' time, with global warming heating up the earth, it will become much easier to extract those minerals. And in 30 years' time, if America is well-placed to be partners with Russia, it splits Russia from China, it allows America to be to maintain its position of being extremely wealthy, and it's exactly the same for Greenland. You can argue that the position of Greenland is strategically important, but probably much more important is the mineral wealth that's underneath Greenland. At the moment, very difficult to get at, but as you move further down the road and the earth warms up, if Greenland was part of America, all of a sudden you've got billions and billions and billions flowing into America. And Trump may not be clever enough to think of all these things, but you've got some very clever cookies in the State Department and the CIA and various other organisations that are taking that 30-year view. What will be good for America? And what won't be good for America is to upset Russia and to try and save Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't matter to America, doesn't matter at all. But those things, the wealth that Russia could have and the partnership and trying to separate China from Russia is so, so important to America in 30 years' time.
Well, Ken, you have come up with an explanation for Trump's policy towards Russia, which is the most logical of anyone that I've ever heard, including a lot of these experts that we get on the station from time to time. But I think there's one flaw in it. And the flaw is, I don't think Donald Trump thinks beyond his own presidency.
I think that's absolutely right. And that's why I say it's not the politicians, it's the clever people in the State Department that every now and again just drip stuff in. And I think the one of the reasons that Trump kind of flip-flops, other than the fact that he's that sort of a character, is because he listens to these arguments and he thinks, yeah, that does make sense. And then the following day, somebody else speaks to him and it makes less sense.
Yeah.
And I think that when people from the, particularly the State Department, come and say to him, look, what is it that we're trying to achieve? And if they can sit him down and say, what is it that you want to achieve? Saving Ukraine is not one of the things that he's likely to come up with. Why would Trump want to save Ukraine? Because it's the right thing to do. I don't think he's that sort of a character. I think that he would much prefer to fall back on, yeah, you're right. If we could separate out Russia from China, America stays as the most powerful country in the world. They've got all those mineral rights. We'd be well positioned to extract them. And I think that the State Department could persuade Trump at sort of odd times that is the way forward. And that's the same for Greenland.
Mm.
I think that's Trump's reason for wanting Greenland. And incidentally, I think he'll get Greenland without too much difficulty. If he says to Greenland, and if he puts forward a case, Greenland independence and all this business, what's Denmark ever done for you? Probably not a lot. You can all become US citizens. Huge country. We'll put money into Greenland. Small population, I'll tell you what, everybody that's 18 plus, I'll give $250,000 to. Cost them about $3 billion, maybe $4 billion, something like that. And compare that to the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of pounds that it would get.
Well, Ken, I'm going to make a plea. I want you to become a regular caller on my evening show, because I think you've been really interesting in what you've said. You'll notice that I've hardly interrupted you, because I just think it's a fascinating take on things. I don't know whether you're right, but
nobody does.
No, but that's the thing. You've brought something new to the debate, and that's what we always want on this station. So, Ken, thank you very much indeed. Steve says, he ends his text saying, P.S., I will have a significant bet that you won't read this out. Well, what's your significant bet, Steve? And then, no, I'll read it out anyway. Ian, what planet are you on? I think I'm on planet Earth. Trump has threatened Greenland and Canada, and for you to say that he may have done, but he doesn't really mean it, is simply naive. Trump has attacked two sovereign states in Nigeria and Venezuela. Well, I'll come back to that because that's actually not true. Using military force and is presently trying to force Ukraine into accepting exactly what his mate Putin wants. Laughably, in the so-called peace talks, Trump hasn't even managed to get Putin to attend. Trump is a growing menace to world peace and apologists for him, such as you. Seriously? You're saying I'm a Trump apologist? Oh my goodness me. Are making that even worse. I've never been a Trump apologist. Right from the day he announced his candidacy in, what was it, 2015 or 2016, I said I would vote for anyone else. I would have voted for Hillary Clinton. I would have voted for Joe Biden in 2020. I would have voted for Kamala Harris. So how you come to that conclusion, I do not know. Now, maybe you come to that conclusion because on the odd occasion where I think Trump has done something right, I will say so. Like the fact that he's launched attacks on ISIS in Nigeria in complete cooperation with the Nigerian government. So when you say he's attacked two sovereign nations, you are absolutely wrong. He also hasn't attacked Venezuela. He has attacked ships that have gone from Venezuela carrying illicit oil. I'll give you that one. But that's not an attack on a sovereign nation like Venezuela. So let's keep to the facts here, shall we? And he may have made some bellicose noises against Greenland and Canada, but has he actually followed it through? No, he hasn't. Now, if that makes me a Trump apologist, well, I plead guilty, but I'm really, really not. I probably say 10% of the time I might say something positive about Donald Trump, but that leaves 90% when I don't. It's 11:48.
I'm James O'Brien. Thank you for listening to me on LBC throughout the year.
The independent sentencing review is good enough for everybody else, but what do you use instead?
Personal experience, lived experience. Listen, if they're the facts, they're the facts. But from my lived experience...
They're the facts, but I know better.
They don't understand culture of the UK.
So what is it?
No, when have I criticised...
What is it? Why can't you tell me what it is? You're criticising people who don't know what the culture of the UK is, so you must be able to tell me.
I can't be asked, buddy. Have a good day.
That went well, didn't it, buddy? I'll be back in the new year taking your call on LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's. Stellantis Financial Services.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10 to 12 on LBC. Let me just give you a brief indication of what we're going to be talking about after 12. The actress Erin Doherty has said that she gets served more quickly using her Princess Anne accent than her normal voice. Now, she played Princess Anne in The Crown. And she says she, when she speaks with a received pronunciation, the accent of the royal family, she gets served more quickly and gets better service. Now, that's led me to think that does your accent maybe hold you back? I'm not really interested in whether you get served more quickly in a restaurant or not, but does your accent hold you back? For example, until comparatively recently, you could not be a newsreader on radio or television unless you spoke with received pronunciation. If you had any sort of regional accent, you'd never get a job as a newsreader. Now it's become almost obligatory. So I wonder whether you've had experience in your own life of where your accent may have held you back, and have you had to modify your accent? So I think that's going to be an interesting discussion after 12. A little bit different from the one that we're having now, although this is interesting as well. Angus is a first-time caller in Eastbourne. Hello, Angus.
Hi there, Ian. Bear with me, I'm 84, but actually your predecessor has hit on the one point I've been looking at, which has been probably vastly overlooked, is actually how geographically very rich Ukraine is. And it's a vast country. I mean, it's bigger than Spain or Germany.
Massive.
And I just wonder whether an agreement could be made that Russia holds on to the land that they already taken over. And I refer back to the mineral element, if you like, because I think I know what Putin's about. It's not only just Ukraine. It's got vast resources. I mean, they've got, in Ukraine, they've got lithium, they've got spare elements, they've got permagite rocks, all sorts of minerals, which are very relevant to the 21st century. And I think that your predecessor actually took the wind out of my sails a bit, because there are vast riches there which have not been able to be mined. So I'm wondering if the USA said, look, what we'll do, you take what you've got, and then obviously make a point of saying you're going to get huge resources out of it. And we will put American engineers and mining people on their feet on the ground to mine.
There's already an agreement to do that that was reached about 18 months ago between Zelensky and Trump, wasn't there?
So what's the problem? Because if American feet are on the ground, it's unlikely Putin surely is going to encroach any further. And mining, as your predecessor said, could take up to, I don't know, 10, 20 years.
Well, I think the problem is...
You see
that,
what I'm saying?
No, I do see what you're saying. But the problem is that Russia is laying claim to the whole of the Donbass region, sort of like east of the Dnipro River, I think it's called, plus obviously Crimea. Now, the problem is that they haven't actually taken all of that region. So what they're now saying is, yeah, we want all of that land, even though there's bits of it that we haven't actually conquered yet. I mean, you can't imagine that Ukraine is ever going to agree to that, and I don't think they will agree to any territorial loss.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting what you're saying, because I thought that surely if Trump says, look, the mining profits would be vast, a percentage of that would be given back to Ukraine to rebuild.
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of things that can be floated. It's just what you think will be acceptable to the Ukrainian people. And in the end, they're the ones that I think would have to approve any peace deal through a referendum.
Yeah. Well, number one, peace. Number two, they would then be able to rebuild their country. Because what Trump will, I would hopefully would do, would say, well, look, you will take a percentage of the mining profits.
Well, I mean, Ukraine could legitimately say, well, I mean, it's our land, it's our minerals. Thank you very much for offering us a percentage, but we want the overwhelming majority because they belong to us.
Oh, I think they're bound to say that as an initial stance. But I think common sense, I would have thought, would be that they want peace. They want peace. They want to get on with their lives. And I think if American feet were on the ground, then that's a surety that they could have peace.
Well, but Russia could then say, well, we're not going to accept any Americans on the ground. We're not going to accept anybody from any NATO countries, whether they're military personnel or civil personnel.
Yeah, but they're not military, are they?
No, but look, the way that Putin thinks, I don't think he'd probably make a distinction.
Well, we don't know what he thinks. That's half the problem.
Angus, thank you very much indeed.
You can go in a different direction, but I really do, I mean, your predecessor put a very good point forward regarding basically the land. And the opportunities that it has, And it's just a question, I think, of Trump and Putin getting some sensible agreement on who takes what. And I would like to see Trump going, and I know damn well that he wants the US to be in there to reap the profits. But I would have thought that his negotiated stance would be a percentage of those profits would obviously go back into Ukraine to rebuild. But who knows?
Who knows? Now, why has it taken you 84 years to make your first-time call, Angus?
I think probably a bit nervous, because at my
you
age,
sound
you think,
it.
I hope I'm saying the right thing, but I've been an avid listener. Love it.
Well, phone into my evening show as well. We'd love to have you on. Thank you. Let's go to Chris in Croydon, who is not a first-time caller. In fact, he's a 340 first-time caller.
Oh, thank you, Liam. Yes. Well, look, what I'm going to suggest is maybe an unpalatable compromise, but I think it's the best that can be done. That is that Russia is allowed to keep the lands that is conquered militarily, but all the inhabitants thereof be allowed to depart and to live in the unconquered parts of Ukraine. And incidentally, all the 20,000 kids that Putin has captured as well.
Quite. And we still don't know where the majority of those are.
No, that's the most wicked thing of all, isn't it?
Well, it really isn't. I mean, if that isn't a war crime, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with that, Chris, is that you are still rewarding Russia for launching the invasion in the first place. If you allow them to keep land that they've conquered militarily, what unfortunate precedent does that set?
Yeah, well, on the other hand, it might not be much use to him, you see, because don't forget, Russia is in fact short of manpower. They've got a very low birth rate because of the, you know, miserable conditions that they have to live in. He'd have a job to find people to do the job anyway.
Well, I mean, Russia is a massive country with a big population, but of course then so is Ukraine. It's not quite so big and not quite such a big population.
Yeah, but it's thinly populated when you think of the area.
Yeah,
you know?
No, absolutely. Thank you very much indeed. Well, I'm not sure we've come to any great conclusion in this hour, but I think it's been a good discussion, a reasonable discussion. I think, was it Ken's call or Keith's? Ken's call, wasn't it? I thought that there was a lot of food for thought in that. Maria in Crowthorne says, thank you so much for a powerful and thoughtful, thought-provoking discussion today. How other listeners can get it so wrong is beyond me. They must have had one too many sherries. Looking forward to tomorrow's show already. Well, look, the whole point of having a debate is to do just that, get different points of view, challenge them, test them, and then possibly come to a conclusion. Not sure we reached a conclusion in that hour, but anyway. Now we're going to move on to a lighter subject. Well, I say lighter subject in a moment. It's actually quite serious in a way. Now, Erin Doherty, who played Princess Anne in The Crown, she said she gets served more quickly using her Princess Anne accent than her normal voice. She spoke in received pronunciation, the accent of the royal family, to play the King's sister in The Crown. She said, "I remember ordering coffees in a Princess Anne voice," she told The Observer magazine, "and it was massively different, which was interesting. It got me my way quicker. My coffee was in my hand." There's an authority to voices like that, and whether we like it or not, you respond differently. Is that your experience? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Conservatives say political activist Ala Abed El Fattah should be stripped of his citizenship after historic tweets emerged. The British Egyptian has apologised for the old posts, which appeared to call for violence. He was recently released from years of detention in Egypt for charges of spreading false news. Journalist Jonathan Sassadotti campaigns against anti-Semitism.
Well, this is a complete sham, and Britain, the UK, has imported a security and public order problem and is legitimising someone that the Egyptians have labelled as violent or extremist. And I think that that's a very sorry state of affairs.
Gloucestershire Police has confirmed a mother and her two children missing after a fire on Boxing Day have died. Officers were unsure if they were inside the house in Brimscombe when it happened in the early hours of Friday. Detective Superintendent Ian Fletcher says the father escaped but wasn't able to save his family.
He then tried to re-enter the property through the bathroom window, by which stage the fire has taken hold in the bathroom and he's unable to get back into the upstairs bedrooms. He's subsequently gone downstairs and tried a force entry via the front and the back door, but has been unable to get back inside the property.
The Kremlin has agreed that peace talks with Ukraine are in their final stage. Donald Trump met with his Ukrainian counterpart in Florida and went on to say an agreement was 95% done. Military analyst Sean Bell says the US president must put pressure on the Kremlin, though, if there's to be a resolution.
Putin will not negotiate unless he's forced to negotiate. Therefore, it's got to be a carrot and stick.
Yeah.
Whether Trump is prepared to use some of the stick as well, Tomahawk missiles, more economic leverage.
Forecasters say heavy snow showers are on the way for parts of the UK. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for snow and ice for parts of Scotland. A cold health alert is also in place across the northeast and northwest of England. And the ICC says Melbourne Cricket Ground's pitch is unsatisfactory. It's after the fourth Ashes test between Australia and England finished within 2 days. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Two minutes past 12 on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for James O'Brien all this week. James will be back next Monday, fear not. Let's talk about accents. Do you think that you have an accent? Because I think a lot of people that do have regional accents slightly deny it because they think, well, no, I just speak in the normal way that I've always done. But we all know a regional accent when we hear one, and there are some that are, shall we say, more attractive than others. He says, entering very dodgy territory here. There are some accents I absolutely love, and there are some regional accents that I absolutely loathe. And it's a free country. We should be able to say what we like and what we don't like. But we know that these regional issues can be very divisive. If you say that you like one city over another, that is divisive. If you say you like one city's accent over another, people get very offended by that. Never quite understood why, to be honest. But the reason this is coming up is because there was an article in the Observer on Sunday all about this, where the actress Erin Doherty has said that she gets served more quickly using her Princess Anne accent than her normal voice. And, of course, she played Princess Anne in The Crown. She said, I remember ordering coffees in a Princess Anne voice, and it was massively different. She said, it got me my way quicker. I think she means more quickly. My coffee was in my hand. There's an authority to voices like that, and whether we like it or not, you respond differently. Now, the difference in how she was treated with an interesting, was what she called an interesting thing to navigate. She said that the people serving her had a bit of an out-of-body experience. Not quite sure what she means by that, but she says you could see it in their faces. And I think that may be true. If you encounter somebody with an incredibly posh accent, that does confer a certain authority on them, doesn't it? I don't know why it should. Maybe because all of the ruling classes used to talk like that. Now, nowadays, the ruling classes are not necessarily people with posh cut-glass accents, but they certainly used to be. And you look at TV dramas going back to Downton Abbey, things in the Edwardian age or Victorian age. You know that accent when you see it, or when you hear it. Let's hear some examples of this. This is Erin Doherty playing Princess Anne in the Netflix series The Crown.
But I'm only human. Sometimes even a pit pony needs a pet on the head.
I know the feeling.
It's not easy. Working in the heat and squalor of a third world country, doing real work for real charities. But do I get as much as a mention in any newspaper? Or a thank you, do I heck? And yet all she has to do is put on a frock, and she's all over all the front pages, and everyone's falling over in shock at how wonderful she is.
Who?
her.
Now, this is Erin Doherty discussing playing Princess Anne in an interview.
And it's still quite weird, because in a way, you obviously... I've done a lot of theatre, so you kind of have an immediate reaction from an audience, whereas this is completely different, because you're on your own doing this character, and then months later, people react to it.
That was not a posh accent, was it? And I mean, look, she's an actress, so obviously part of the acting experience is to put on a voice that isn't necessarily your own. I mean, there are some actors that we can think of that they just play themselves in everything that they're in, but she clearly isn't one of those. Is her normal voice, is that a voice that does not sort of confer authority? I would suggest that it probably is. And I said before, when I was trailing this programme about 10, 15 minutes ago, I said, if you look at the voices that newsreaders on the media have now, whether it's radio or television, 20, 30, 40 years ago, every newsreader would have had to have spoken what we then would have called the Queen's English, received pronunciation, the kind of pronunciation that we imagine more upper-class people use, because that conferred authority. And particularly, I think, if you're the national broadcaster, you need to do that. But nowadays, it's almost obligatory to have a regional accent when you're a newsreader. And I'll be completely honest with you, I don't like it when newsreaders have overt regional accents. Now, you might think, well, that's a bad thing and that you're just being a snobby. And it's not being snobbish, it really isn't. I just think a newsreader has to have a voice that is believable, that is trustworthy, and it confers a degree of authority. Now, that may be a very old-fashioned view. I think it probably is. And I'm perfectly willing to accept that I may be completely wrong on that, and that younger generations nowadays don't make that distinction at all. And you can have any regional accent and read the news, and it means exactly the same. So I'm quite happy to accept that my views on that are pretty old-fashioned. My mother once said to me, and this was when I was probably 16, 17 years old, she said, I think you should hyphenate your surname. I said, what on earth do you mean? And she said, well, put your middle name and your surname together. Now, my middle name is Campbell, a middle name which I've always loathed and detested because it was always used against me at school. Oh, Campbell's soup, ha ha, very funny. So she wanted me to change my name to Ian Campbell Dale. She said it would help me get on in life. Now, bear in mind, this was the mid to late 1970s when I think... if you had a posh accent, if you had a double-barreled surname, that may well have helped you get on. Now, obviously, I totally ignored her advice, and I have no regret in ignoring that advice. But if you make a restaurant booking, and the waiter sees a titled name or a double-barreled surname, do you get treated differently? Do you get a better table? I suspect in some ways you probably do. Even in 2025, I suspect that still happens. So has your accent affected your life? I mean, it's a simple question in many ways, but I think a lot of people have to think about it and think, well, has it? If I've got a broad West Midlands accent or a Liverpool accent or a Geordie accent, has that affected my career? Does that affect how people view me? Because we all know that regional accents do imply some certain stereotypes. Now, we needn't go into all of the different stereotypes that exist, but... I mean, I think if you have a very broad Scouse accent or a very broad Brummie or West Midlands accent, you aren't taken as seriously in some sectors of society. It's wrong, but it's true, isn't it? What's been your experience? And have you ever tried to modify your accent to become accepted in a social circle or indeed to get a job? If you look at where call centres are located in the country, they're generally located in areas where people's accents are trusted. So you get a lot around Edinburgh, you get a lot around Newcastle, because the Geordie accent is one that people generally quite like and respect and trust. I'd venture to suggest that there aren't as many call centres in certain other parts of the country. Now, again, you can say, well, that's wrong. Everybody should be treated equally. But I mean, if you are a company that wants to be trusted, you're going to want to go where the accents are that people do trust. It's just natural human nature, isn't it? So what effect has your accent had on your life? 0345 6060 973. Do you remember when you were at school and you moved from one part of the country to the other? How difficult was it for you to be accepted? Do you remember Brookside? Those of you of a certain vintage will remember it's a very popular soap on Channel 4 in the 80s and 90s. I saw the other day, in an idle moment, I saw they'd started re-showing it on one of those UK Gold-type channels. So I watched the first two or three episodes, and there's a family in there who have fallen on hard times. The father's lost his job. They're very sort of middle, upper middle class on Merseyside, but they don't have Merseyside accents at all. They would be considered quite posh. The children go to private schools, and they fall on hard times, so they end up in a sort of box house in Brookside Close. And, OK, this is a drama, I get that. But their accents meant that they weren't accepted in the way that others were accepted in that same area. Now, I wonder if that's been your experience, where maybe you moved from London to Leeds or London to Newcastle as a child, and you found it very difficult to get accepted with people at school. Were you treated differently by teachers? Did it give you a different outlook on life? 0345 6060 973. Oliver in Croydon says, regarding accents, whilst I don't know if it has disadvantaged me, I have a distinct South African accent, and that seems to give people around me the impression I am happy to hear the most horrible racism aimed at black folk. Causes no small amount of discomfort when I tell them to, off. I think that is interesting. I'm one of the few people that actually really likes South African accents. I absolutely adore them. Most people think they're hideous. So we can widen this out to world accents if you want. But again, when I was at school, one day on the school bus, so these two kids turned up, and their parents, well, their father had died. He was a bank manager in Trinidad, and they were both white, but they talked with West Indian accents. And, oh, my God, initially, didn't they get the Mickey Mickey taken out of them? And I think they made a deliberate decision to moderate their accents to try and be accepted. And I think that's entirely... it's not an unusual thing for anybody with a different accent who comes into a different environment to modify their accents. Have you ever had to do that? Well, Erin Doherty says that she gets a quicker service with a posh accent. Do you? 0345 6060 973. It's coming up to 12:15.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are...
the nation's most trusted vets.
We think that's because they're...
locally owned.
And locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a 1 litre bottle of Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey for just £20. Down from £34.50 with your Tesco Club card. Tesco, every little helps. Drink aware 18 plus, majority of larger stores, ends 31st of December. Club card or app required.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
The following is from TFL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights, and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed. by a nice lady. Just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
12:15 on LBC. Jerry in Glasgow says, you are absolutely guilty of snobbishness regarding your views on newsreaders and accents. You said that it's not snobbery because you think the news should be read in a voice that has authority. The snobbery here is that you believe regional accents somehow lack authority or the ability to convey serious information. That's your problem. There's no getting away from that. Well, I can completely understand why you take that view, Jerry, but there are some accents, not all, but there are some that do not confer authority. And I think that's just a fact of life, whether you like it or not. Alison is in Manchester. Hello, Alison.
Hi, Ian. Hello. How are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Yeah, it's a really interesting subject, actually, hence what I dialed in. I'm from Manchester. I'm when I was 27. Back in the late 90s, I moved out to Australia. I was out there for about 12 years. It was really interesting how... And maybe times have changed, hopefully they have, that people, maybe other British people would think that if you had a northern accent, maybe the job opportunities were not as accessible as if you'd had a southern accent or spoke in a posh way, which at 27 is quite hard to change unless you literally start acting classes. So it's always stuck with me. I'm now 54. And when it came, when you mentioned on the radio the subject of it, it obviously I've dialed in because if you're a person with low self-esteem, it would affect your confidence because you're not, you know, you're born where you're born. And, you know, it should be something that we should embrace. It was almost, the Australians embraced all the accents. It was almost the British people had some issues. So we are a small island and I think we should embrace all accents because that's what... makes us such a great place.
Yeah, and I agree with you. In theory, we should, but the problem is that there are still some professions where regional accents are can be an advantage, and some where they're a positive disadvantage. I mean, I think probably in the maybe until recently, if you had a regional accent, it was more difficult to become a diplomat, for example, because of the notion that a diplomat sort of speaks for Britain and therefore has to have a proper received pronunciation accent. Now, I don't think that's the case anymore, but it certainly was the case until comparatively recently. I think to go into politics, a regional accent might be of great advantage in your local constituency, but becoming Prime Minister with a very broad, certain regional accent possibly is not an advantage to people.
I completely agree. It's so sort of skills and experience sort of go slightly out the window for, you know, for jobs. So I do think it is changing, but it has taken some time. But I think for people out there, you know, that are born in whichever part of the country they are, it's to embrace your accent and where you're from.
Yeah.
Rather than hide away and maybe affect your confidence in what you want to succeed.
See, what do you think, if I get a caller from Manchester with a Northwest Manchester accent, what do you think the first thing, the phrase that goes through my mind is, positive or negative?
All right, love. Yeah, I think it seems like it has been embraced because this year I watched Celebrity Jungle, which I don't normally watch. I'm a celebrity. And there were a couple of characters from Manchester and also from the North. And it did make me laugh because it sort of brings it back home to you, you know. But I'm hoping that the wider country, you know, we accept each other as people and not just judges on our accent.
Alison, thank you very much indeed. She didn't push me on what I thought, what goes through my mind when I get a caller from Manchester, did she? Well, I'll actually tell you, because I think, and this is more for male callers, if I hear a broad Mancunian accent, the phrase that goes through my mind is cheeky chappy. Now, you might say, well, that says more about you than anything else. And I don't regard that as a bad thing, actually. But if you're conducting a job interview and you have someone with an accent and your immediate thought is cheeky chappy, is that going to be an advantage to you? I don't know, is the honest answer. I can't remember interviewing anyone with a Manchester accent. I suppose I must have done over the years. Gary says, Tom Reed Wilson is one of the most refreshingly pleasant voices I've heard recently. Should be encouraged, in my view. Wish I had that eloquence. Now, I'd never heard of him, but I'm told he was on I'm a Celebrity, and I did catch, if he's the one I'm thinking of, a very, very posh accent. I mean, incredibly posh accent. And with a massive vocabulary as well. And I think we all also associate posh accents with people who've gone to public schools, don't we? Not always the case, but would James O'Brien think that he has a posh accent? He went to a public school, didn't he? He's well-spoken, but I wouldn't call his accent posh. I wouldn't call my accent posh, but plenty of people have over the years. And I've never tried to change my accent in any way at all. Would I have done that if I had an accent that was that I thought was holding me back in life? I don't know. Never had to make that decision. So thanks for that, Gary. Let's move on to Rob, who's in Maidstone. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Ian. Nice to speak to you. On that subject of whether somebody's posh, I always think of that Greg's expression. You meet a lot of people in life who were born 3-0 up, who think they scored a hat-trick.
say that again?
You meet a lot of people in life who are born 3-0 up who think they've scored a hat-trick.
Oh, I see. I think I know what you mean by that.
Yeah. Anyway, good to speak to you. You probably hear I've got quite a strong West Country accent, and I've spent my life setting fire to the stereotypes about a West Country accent. So I went back to university as a mature student and got a first-class degree. My wife is the chief executive of Leeds Castle in Kent, so we live on a castle estate.
I know that. I used to play golf there quite a lot.
I gather you like the golf there. And my son's at Trinity College at Cambridge, so all those stereotypes about, you know, the West Country being a little bit thick and all that, it doesn't always ring true, you know? Does that make sense?
I don't think it does ring true at all. I mean, some of the most intelligent people I know are from the West Country, but you're right that there is. It's also like where I've spent a lot of time in my life in Norfolk, where people, because there's that sort of slightly yokely part to the accent, people automatically think that you're sort of one sandwich short of a picnic.
That's right. Well, I came, Tom, like you said, from the farming community, and it was a great experience in that a lot of the Cornish farmers are very wily and very clever, and people would think they'd do business with them. They think, oh, this person, they've got that voice. They don't, and actually, they would actually dupe people. They would put people at ease, and then actually they'd come out the winner in the deal because they were a lot sharper than their accent might have suggested, if that makes sense. So.
And that can be a great advantage in life if you appear to be a lot less intelligent than you actually are.
Yes, yeah. So there's a lot of stereotypes here. So
and how long have you been in Maidstone?
So we've been at Leeds Castle 4 or 5 years. My wife previously was a chief executive on the Mary Rose, so we've had quite an interesting life, you know.
Absolutely right. Yeah. She'd make a good guest one day. Rob, thank you very much for that. Let's move on to Fiona, who's in Richmond, and you don't get posher than Richmond, do you, Fiona?
Well, that's not where I grew up in Richmond, actually. I grew up abroad, and I suppose my parents were English language teachers, so I think I spoke standard English. It was recognised easily abroad. Then got sent to boarding school, where I had to improve my grammar, etc. And then money ran out at some point, and I got sent at 15 to a state school, where, honestly, it was totally unacceptable to have anything other than, you know, a local accent. And being called posh was not seen as a compliment. It was like, run for it, you know. It was better to say as little as possible, or in my case, befriend a crowd that would look after you if things got ugly. So it was a very strange thing having any sort of accent, because I found I ended up in London. My parents were all abroad and had no money. If I went to somewhere like the housing department, which other people, and, you know, we were like 16, 17 and no jobless, moneyless, and asked for help, I was always told to ring a family member or, you know, what are you doing here? You know, it was a very strange assumption that were made that because you speak a certain way, you must have money somewhere. What earth are you doing in a job centre or something like that? So I'm not saying there haven't been advantages to maybe having a more standard accent. There probably, I don't even notice it, but there are. But there are also disadvantages. And it's also interesting how being, you know, an accent can make people want to hate you or fight you or, you know, it's just a strange angle. It's not the expected angle, is it? But there can be negatives to every way that people speak, depending where you are.
Yeah, and I think this whole thing about getting served differently if you have a posh accent, I think that is an interesting one. I remember when I was at university in Norwich in the 1980s and Norman Tebbit was sort of in his heyday, and I booked a table at a restaurant and gave my surname as Tebbit and automatically got the best table in the restaurant. Nothing to do with accents, but it was just sort of people react to that sort of thing, don't they?
It's perceptions, and people think if you speak a certain way, you've got to have money somewhere. Yeah. And it really wasn't the case. And so that meant it was like a door was shut to all this sort of help that might have been available to people who, I don't know, didn't speak the same way. It was a strange experience.
Is there an accent that you wish you could have acquired?
I just don't think it would work with it. It wouldn't. I'd have just made a hash of it, and they'd have thought I was even a real jerk. You know, I don't think I could have tried that. You know.
Okay, Fiona. Thank you very much. Let's go to Nikki, who's in Crawley. Hello, Nikki.
Oh, hiya. I've had problems with my accent. People think I'm from Essex.
Well,
I'm from South London.
I come from Essex, and I can understand why they might say that, Nikki, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, and like, I went for a job in the 80s to be a telephone operator for a mail order company, and they said, no, you can't have the job with that, but we'll find you something else to do because of my accent.
Really?
And I was really disappointed because I wanted to be a telephone operator.
What did you end up doing?
Oh, enrolling people to RAC.
There's nothing wrong with that.
there was no phone. It was just all paperwork. But I didn't mind. Do you know what I mean? I got nice handwriting, so... But, yeah, everybody that meets me, oh, are you from Essex? Nah, I'm from South London, Clapham. But I do try and speak posh, but then when I try, I get tongue-tied.
Go on, try it.
I can't, because I try in garden centres. I do, because you get nice people in garden centres, and I think, oh, I better not open my mouth in here. They might think it's the cleaner coming out.
That is hilarious.
But there you go. I don't let it bother me, do you know what I mean? We are what we are, aren't we?
Well, we are, and we should all be proud of who we are. And
exactly. And
I mean, look, voices, it's just one part of our personality. And just because some people might not like a particular accent, that doesn't mean to say it's a bad accent, does it?
Exactly. And I must tell you this, though. I love listening to your voice. It's very soothing.
Well, see, I think my voice is quite soporific and sends people to sleep, but which is not ideal for a radio presenter in many ways. I remember when I first came to LBC and when I started presenting the Drive Time programme, which Drive Time shows are much more pacey than others. And so they actually got me a voice coach, can you believe? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I had this voice when I got the job. It can't be that bad. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let me on the radio. But they kept saying, no, you've got to be much more pacey. Quick. Because on a Drive Time show, you do like things for 5 minutes and people don't listen for as long on a Drive Time show.
Oh.
And so I had this producer who, the way that they... See, I can't really say this word on the radio at this time of day, but this producer, just before the red light would go on my microphone at the beginning of the programme, would yell in my ear through the glass. Now, Eleanor is looking at me in a very concerned way now. She would yell, "Big Grolocks!" Except the word wasn't Grolocks.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I think you probably can.
Yeah.
But it worked. It just made me sort of sharpen up a bit and become much more quick in what I was saying. But yeah, well, I'm glad you like my voice, Nikki.
Yeah, I do. And I like yours.
Really
do. Oh, thank you. Because can you imagine me doing the news? Do you think people would listen?
I think it would have to be a certain type of news bulletin, wouldn't it?
Do you think so? Like news flash.
I'm tempted now to get the script for our 12:30 news so you can read it afterwards.
Could you imagine? But
I suspect that might be vetoed by Eleanor.
Yeah, I think so.
I've worked with Eleanor for about 12 years, but we've never actually done a programme together, if you see what I mean. So she's getting used to my ways and I'm getting used to hers. So she's giving me any indication, any encouragement for doing this. But we'll see, Nikki. Thank you very much.
What a great call.
Thank you very much indeed. Right, keep your calls coming. Has your accent held you back? 0345 6060 973. It's 12:30 on LBC. Let's get the news headlines with Lucinda Hawley.
President Zelensky says the US is offering Ukraine security guarantees for 15 years as part of a proposed peace plan. He says he'd prefer a commitment of up to 50 years to deter Russia from further attempts to seize its neighbour's land by force. The Prime Minister is facing calls to deport a British Egyptian activist over resurfaced social media posts. Ala Abd El Fattah has apologised for historic remarks, appearing to call for violence towards Zionists. A mother and her two young children have died after a house fire in Gloucestershire. It broke out in Stroud early on Boxing Day. The father survived and is being treated in hospital. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC. Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
With Lidl Plus, a Lini Prosecco Spumante is £4.65 and Comte de Senneval Champagne is only £9.99. Celebrate the new year with class. Lidl, more to value. Be drink aware, 18 plus, subject to availability, exclude Scotland. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 31st of the 12th.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles. With you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
FanningDental.co.uk.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New in, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:34 on LBC. We're talking about accents and whether an accent confers authority to you or the opposite. What's been your experience? Had your accent hindered you in life or maybe helped you in life? Tina is in Haddenham. Hello, Tina.
Hello, Ian. I'd just like to say that my mother came over from Northern Ireland with a very strong accent. She'd only been here a few weeks when she took her 11 plus and passed and went to grammar school. She was roundly mocked and failed to be understood. And the only time I ever heard her use that accent was to her sister's when they phoned her. Hmm. And we would all look at each other and say, oh, it must be Auntie Paddy or Auntie Kay. But the thing was, it had that effect on her, so she brought us up to speak completely what used to be called received pronunciation. And whereas I started off my life in Southeast London and talked very similarly with my friends to the lady you just had on, I knew how to speak properly. I only ever talked like that at school, and I was absolutely ingrained with the rules of grammar, so that even now when people say different to instead of different from, I have to shout at the radio, from! Don't you know any English grammar? And this was all down to my mother's experience. But my sister went to university in Leeds, and although she hadn't changed her accent, and her children can speak perfectly in inverted commas, received pronunciation, they can also speak Leeds. So when one of them rang up once to tell me they'd been to Blackpool, she said, Auntie Tina, we've been to Blackpool to see the illuminations. And I said, I don't think you have, Daisy. I think you might have been to Blackpool to see the illuminations. She said, oh, I forgot who I was with. Sorry. So what we become, I think, is bilingual. And the reason that I, like you, suffer a reaction to people with regional accents reading the news is I don't necessarily understand what they're saying. In fact, there was a continuity chap on TV, I think it was 4, Channel 4, and I couldn't understand a word he was saying. So I do think there is a benefit in being, as my nieces call it, bilingual, because it means you can communicate with anybody, but when you're with your friends, you talk as you were brought up to. What do you think of that thesis?
Well, I think it's an interesting one, because it's interesting you mentioned Leeds. One of my favourite callers, and I don't know whether he calls into James, I'm pretty sure he will do, is Tyler in Leeds. Who, right. And whenever I speak to Tyler, he goes, hey, up, Ian, and I go, hey, up, cock. And I'm sure people mm-hmm. who've never heard him on the radio think, why is he doing that? That's a bit patronising, isn't it? But no, we just built up this little bit of banter, and that's absolutely fine.
I had my first job in Nottingham. I was a teacher for 44 years. And when the children said at the end of the first day, shall we put us quotes on this? I had no idea what they'd said. They had to mime until I understood that quotes were coats, and they'd use the dative us, and, you know, we began to communicate. But when I used to call the register in Nottingham and go, Debbie, Mandy, Tracy, like this, they'd go, oh, miss.
You see, it's not the accents that bother me. It is what you said earlier on in the conversation.
Communication.
It's when people say, like, they use less instead when they mean fewer. That really gets my goat, and I do correct people on that.
Oh, well, that's a grammar one, and I'm forever correcting people. And the BBC are some of the worst offenders for that. And they used to be the absolute pickle of grammatical correctness. No, I'm a real grammar Nazi, as we refer to it in the family. I will not hold with ending a sentence with a preposition either.
You see, that's going too far.
Yes, but you didn't have your hat put on straight by a Belfast girl who'd had... Everybody thought she was thick. She went on to get 2 degrees and get first class ones as well. She just did another one later in life when we'd left home. She thought, oh, I need something to do. So she did another one and then went on and got PhD after it. But, you know, intelligent woman who was treated as though she was thick because she had this accent.
I don't know, did you ever used to listen to Steve Wright in the afternoon when he used to have all of these different characters, and he had Ruth in Belfast, and she was basically a character who had verbal diarrhea, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
And what was the others? Damien the social worker, Mr. Angry from Purley. Those were the days. Tina, thank you very much indeed. Very entertaining call. Johnny is in Glastonbury. Hello, Johnny.
Well, we're going to keep the Belfast theme a bit here.
Good.
Because I came over from Belfast in 1965. My first sort of 10 years were in Belfast. And I had the thickest Belfast accent. I can feel myself doing a wee bit of a Belfast accent now, but I had lost... I was surrounded by little boys in the playground, and they were sort of poking me to make me speak, get me to speak, to hear my accent. I had lost that accent within 6 months. it had completely gone. It had vanished. And the thing, the other bit you were talking about was newsreaders. Now, my father was a newsreader for Ulster Television when it first started in 1959. And, of course, he spoke with complete received pronunciation, not a tinge. I mean, he was from Belfast, but not a tinge of a Belfast accent at all. So I think losing and changing the accent to fit in, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to fit in with all the other little tinge.
Which is a perfectly natural human instinct, isn't it?
But I still do it now. So it's like, I mean, if I travel around the country selling things at concerts, and if I spent some years in the Highlands of Scotland, and if I'm in Scotland doing a gig, I start doing bits of Scottish and the vernacular, and or in Leeds, like that lady was saying. So it's like, for me, it's like wanting to fit in. Or people who are, you know, have been to public school. I remember one musician saying to me, asking me, well, I'd been talking to him for a little while, which school did I go to? Because I had upped my accent to fit in with how he was speaking. So he thought I'd gone to a public school.
Well, that's interesting, because a lot of people think I went to public school, and I absolutely did not.
Yes, I'm glad I didn't go to a public school.
That's another matter. Saffron Walden County High, mate.
No, we were in Twickenham when we moved over. But in fact, I was actually born in London. So, I mean, I'm actually a Cockney. I'm an Irish Peruvian Cockney. So, I mean, I could have there's a range of accents I could go for there.
with an identity crisis.
Absolutely. But you speak to me and I'll fit in with whatever you want.
I'll take your word for that. Thank you very much. Bob says, when I got my job in the bank in 1980 in London, I had to lose my West Midlands accent overnight. I've never flipped back. Sal's in Paddington. Hi, Sal.
Hi there. So I learnt how to speak the way I do because at the age of 4, there were workmen in the house who were making fun of my mother because she spoke with a heavy Spanish accent. And they were basically saying all sorts of things that they didn't think that I could understand, and were being quite rude about my mother. And I learnt then and there that people would judge me if I spoke with an accent that my parents spoke with.
So how did that inform you later on in life?
I was thought to have gone to Oxford before I actually went. It proved very useful when applying for jobs because people couldn't really understand from the CV that they'd been given when I went to interview, because my name's Salvador. They were a bit confused, and one of my usual quips was, yes, when they said, where are you from? And I said, well, I'm Spanish, can't you tell from my accent? To which they sort of looked at me in a sort of bewildered fashion. I think up with this, we shall not put position. It's all about the image that is projected and what people have associated with certain accents that's the problem. Because people don't listen to necessarily to what you're saying and the subject matter. They have made their decisions based on the accent sometimes, and that's a problem.
I think there was a time in this country where if two people went for a university place, particularly maybe Oxbridge, and one of them spoke with a very posh upper-class accent and didn't have particularly good A-level qualifications, and the second one had straight A's but spoke with a Liverpool accent, I think the first one would have almost automatically still got the place. I don't think that's still the case. I hope it isn't. But I'm not sure that's been totally eliminated from either universities or indeed the jobs market per se.
Or politics?
Possibly.
The Rees-Moggs of this world and, you know, Tolman Blee Warners get away with an awful lot more because of how they sound.
Yeah, that's I'm trying to think about what sort of like famous politicians of the last 10 or 15 years have their careers been enhanced because of the way that they speak? I mean, Boris Johnson, you could make an argument, I suppose, for the, but that's more sort of the, it's not the posh accent. Well, he has got a posh accent, isn't it? But it's sort of more the, more his character. I think that's what propelled him in politics. I'm trying to think of others that may have been disadvantaged. I mean, Angela Rayner, for example. I mean, she's obviously got a Northwestern accent. That's not, clearly not held her back.
But only because it was turned to her advantage and it was well marketed.
Yeah. Jess Phillips, the same. I mean, she comes across as a genuine person, partly because of the way that she speaks.
And it's always thought of as, you know, a confident picture that can sell you insurance with a received pronunciation is no less dangerous than someone who's trying to sell you something that's fallen off the back of a lorry, if they're selling you something that's no good for you.
Yeah, because you automatically think the person that's selling you something from the back of a lorry has got a Cockney accent. That's sort of little bit dodgy, a little bit wow, a little bit way, as they used to say on the Fast Show.
But the one thing you know is that they didn't get it from Argos, you know.
Okay, Sal, thank you very much. Caroline says, accents are beautiful. I love them. I find the variations really fascinating. That's one of the nice things about phone-ins. Well, you're absolutely right, Caroline. Shame you texted. I'd like to hear her jewels. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Should he stay or be made to go? Egyptian activist Alaa Abdel Fattah apologises for racist views. Will Anglo-French cooperation on Channel Migrants achieve much? And is sex-based abortion ever acceptable?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
The following is from TFL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
New Tesco Mobile pay-as-you-go essentials. It's simple, really. A SIM. With the data you need, the minutes you need, the text you need, and some club card points too. Pay-as-you-go essentials. Putting the SIM into simple. Buy online or in store. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Collect 1 point for every £1 spent. Tesco Club Card terms apply. See tescomobile.com.
Ian Dale on LBC.
12:49, Dave, who says he's now in the southwest, says, I have an estuary accent as I'm originally from the Medway towns. I was a civil servant for many years and I sometimes felt out of place accent-wise. Although I progressed well, I felt like it would have been easier had I not been known as Dagenham Dave. By the way, that's quite a significant insult if you are from the other side of the river. Well, you're absolutely right on that, Dave. And I have a caller called Dave in Dagenham, so I won't hear anything again. Dagenham, Dave. Let's go to the wonderfully named Thor in Waltham Forest. Now, you see, you sound like a godlike person to me.
All right, yeah.
not now.
all right, yeah. Anyway, so I'm the other way. I'm public school. I was in the Guards, and then I left and retrained as an electrician, and nobody took me seriously on the building sites. so I had to change. I code switch. So on the weekends, I can be dear boy, but on the work, I'd be ear oi.
Right.
So, and so I you,
isn't that basically having a bit of a split personality?
I do, and my wife says it's hilarious that I can go into a shop and have one accent, but if I'm in a builder's merchant, it changes completely to something else. And I'll do it several times a day. I just go in and out of different accents.
But do you do it deliberately, or does it just happen?
It happens now through habit. It happens through habit. In the beginning, I had to learn East London. And it was comic in the beginning, and then you just ease yourself into it, and now I switch backwards and forwards.
I mean, to me, that seems a bit weird.
It is weird. Other people think it's weird, but if I don't, people... I mean, I'm an electrician, so... Well, I'm retired now, but... electricians on building sites are generally derided anyway because we have clean clothes, unlike the rest of the builders. But, so people would mock me because of my accent. So I just ended up speaking like them, and people then just accept you. And then back in your other world, you have another accent. It's like speaking a different language in a way.
Yeah, I can see why it happens. It still seems a bit of an unnatural thing to do, though.
If you can't, I mean, I find it quite easy to code switch, so I just do. It just makes you fit in easily.
Okay, well, look, what works for one person might not work for another. It clearly works for you. Thank you very much indeed. Craig in Liverpool says, what do you think of Sheila Fogarty's accent? She's from Liverpool, and as a fellow Scouser, I often find that she hides her accent a bit. Really? I don't know if she does it on purpose or not. I haven't found that my accent has held me back. I work as a director level for multinational corporations, though the stigma is absolutely still present. Interestingly, if Andy Burnham becomes PM, his accent has changed completely recently. What you mean, a bit more northern? I think you may be right there, Craig. I don't think Sheila has changed her accent. I think, given that she's lived in the south for so many years now, I think all of our voices adapt to where we live. I can still hear the Scouse in Sheila Fogarty, particularly when she's getting very excited with a caller. I've never lived for any length of time outside the East Anglia or London, so I suppose I've got no real personal experience of this. But I did live in Germany for a couple of years, once in the north, once in the south, and getting used to the Schwäbisch accent in the south took some getting used to. But I did find by the end of that year that I was speaking German with a southwestern German accent, whereas where I lived in northern Germany, it was the equivalent of received pronunciation called Hochdeutsch. Right, let's move on to Lauren, who's in Tooting. Hello, Lauren.
Now, I've been here over 40 years, and I haven't lost my Glasgow accent.
I can tell.
And if I do, people say, why are you speaking like that? When I have to slow down.
Well, you see, you say you haven't lost your Glasgow accent. If you'd said to me, Ian, where do you think I'm from in Scotland? I would have said Edinburgh.
Never.
Yes.
But you know what? I went to the Middle East and learned Arabic, and the Scottish speak a very good Arabic because we have the... So if you were on the telephone, you would think you were speaking to an Arab with my... Scottish Arabic accent. Isn't it funny?
I must admit, I've never heard that analogy before, but I can see it. It's a bit like, because I speak German, I love the sound of Dutch, because it's also got that kind of noise, which I like, but most people don't.
Yes. So, if I get in a cab, they say, just down for the weekend, love. And I say, no, take a right here instead of a left, please.
Yeah, because once they know that you're not from the area. Lauren, thank you very much. Let's go to Steve in Orpington. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Ian. How are you doing, mate? Lovely to talk to you.
Good, thank you. Welcome to the programme. What would you like to say?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm going to do the same thing. Guess where I was born?
Orpington.
No, that's a proper guess. No, I was born in Scotland. And when I was like 5 or 6, my dad moved us all, the whole family, down to southern England, actually the Medway towns. I had a Scottish accent, and we just enrolled in school, me and my twin brother. And we got picked on. This was back in like the early 70s, mid 70s. So we got picked on because of our Scottish accent, you know, that English south-north divide and all that.
Yeah.
But of course, being that young, you know, you pick up on accents around you and things. So we got a little little English accent. And then my dad, he got moved over to Southern Ireland. And we enrolled in school there, but we got picked on in school there for being English. You know, Southern Ireland and England back in the early 70s, probably the 80s then. You know, so again, we picked up, you know, like the English accent and a little bit of Irish. And then my dad decided to move us back up to Scotland, where we had an English-Irish accent, and we got madly bullied at school because they thought we were English. You know, and I'm like, well, no, we were actually born in Scotland, and they didn't believe us. They thought we were lying and things.
Mm.
And then later on in life, I moved over to the States. I stayed there for 15 years, where I kind of picked up an American accent. And now I'm big in Orpington, and everybody's trying to figure out where I'm from. But that's my...
Well, you would never tell that you have Scottish roots.
Nah, but when I speak to my mum, like I'm real close with my mum now, I'm back home and things, like it does come out because she's still broad Scottish kind of thing, you know?
I think that can happen. It's like when I go back to Norfolk, often, I mean, Norfolk people are a bit the same as Australians. Their voices go up at the end of a sentence.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I tend, that's the only sort of example of Norfolk that I do.
It's totally unintentional though, isn't it? You know, I mean, you don't, it's not something that, I mean, unless you really, because you hear about people going on holiday to Australia for 2 weeks and coming back and speaking like Crocodile Dundee and stuff, you know.
Yeah, didn't happen to me. Steve, thank you very much indeed. Andreas says, please say something in Schwäbisch. What can I say in Schwäbisch? Well, if I would say, right, that makes me sick in English, in Hochdeutsch, so proper German, you say, das ist zum Kotzen. In Schwäbisch, you'd say, das ist zum Kotzen. Sheila Fogarty.
That sounds quite scouse.
Does it?
Yeah, in terms of the pitch of it, yeah.
So go on. Craig in Liverpool thinks you've lost your accent, deliberately or not.
Not deliberately. I have probably lost my accent a bit. I'm still obviously northern, you know, glass, black. Oh, no, black. Nobody says black, do they? But whatever, you know, I still have northern vowels. Black. I never said black. And the thing about Liverpool accents is I've just been up there all week with my family. You know, none of my nieces, for example, or nephews, who are all in their early 20s to early 30s now, none of them speak like Stevie Gerrard, you know. Not everybody in Liverpool speaks like that, the sort of panto scouse, you know. But also I've lived away from Liverpool longer than I've lived in Liverpool.
Well, I hope you heard me defending your honour.
No, it's not. I don't mind. I mean, if I get narky, I can sound a lot more scouse, I think.
I have noticed that sometimes.
Can't believe what he just said to me!
Calm down.
Just watch it.
Is there an accent that you would love to have had? Ooh, and are there accents that you don't like? And do you agree with me that newsreaders need
which
to
ones...
speak proper English?
No, not necessarily. I'm a snob. I'm a voice snob, not about accents, except for one, but I'm not going to say which. But I'm a voice snob about the tone of somebody's voice. I don't like ugly voices, you know, like a voice that's like a knife in your ear. Can't stick around for that, I'm afraid.
I agree.
If people have got weird voices, and that's terrible, isn't it? It's, you know, just because I'm
just
the Cadbury's bunny doesn't mean...
Well, none of our colleagues do, isn't it?
No, they don't.
Well, they wouldn't be on the radio
But I just mean in life in general, not just broadcasting.
Well, thanks for all of your calls and messages this morning.
You're putting that on.
I'm back tomorrow from 10 o'clock. Now, you can download the all-new official LBC application for free from your application store right now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's the wonderfully spoken Simon Miles. He really is wonderfully spoken.
Yes.
In for Tom Swarbrick.
And a great voice.
Absolutely. But next, here's Sheila Fogarty.
Sheila Fogarty. Thanks very much indeed, Ian. And have a great rest of your day. At 3 today, the British Pregnancy Advisory Service says abortion on the grounds of sex isn't illegal. The NHS, though, strongly rejects the practice. Is it ever okay? Is it any worse, for example, than abortion because of convenience or timing? Talk about that later. At 2, France's maritime police countries are not playing ball when it comes to an agreement over Channel migrants. What should we do? And should the Egyptian activist Ala Abdel Fattah stay or be made to go? He has citizenship of this country. He's apologised for racist and anti-Semitic views, to name just a few things he tweeted some time ago. Kemi Badenoch, though, says the Prime Minister has lionised a racist. Is she right?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Ukraine's president appears to have accepted a shorter security guarantee from the US if a peace deal is reached with Russia. Volodymyr Zelensky says the 15 years on offer is less than the 50 he'd asked for. Moscow says it's expecting a call with Donald Trump very soon, following last night's talks. Former British diplomat Sir Simon Gass isn't convinced the Kremlin's serious about peace.
What we hear is absolutely no flexibility and very little interest in reaching a peace deal unless Russia gains the territory which it is most attached to, particularly all of the Donbass.
Downing Street says a British Egyptian activist's historic tweets were abhorrent in nature and apologising for them was the right thing to do. Ala Abd El Fattah was recently released from prison in Egypt. He says his remarks, which encouraged attacks on police and Zionists, had been completely twisted. A mother and her two young children, unaccounted for after a house fire in Gloucestershire, have been confirmed dead. It broke out in Stroud early on Boxing Day. Their father survived and has been treated in hospital. DSI Ian Fletcher says he tried to save his family.
The father has smashed his way out of the house through a bathroom window in order to try to access the child's bedroom via the outside. He's been unable to enter the property via that bedroom window. He's then tried to re-enter the property through the bathroom window, by which stage the fire has taken hold in the bathroom.
The fire's not being treated as suspicious. Heavy snow showers are on the way for parts of the UK. A yellow weather warning's been issued for areas of Scotland from 6am on New Year's Day until midnight on January the 2nd. FIFA says the highest number of ticket requests for next summer's World Cup have come from the UK, US and Germany. Expensive prices led to criticism of the governing body, with more affordable ones for the tournament than provided. 150 million ticket requests have since been made. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was up 14 points at 98.85. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, a cold day across the UK, staying dry for most with some sunshine in Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lucinda Horsley.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Good to be back with you after Christmas, the Christmas week that's just gone by. I know many of you still on your Christmas break. Hope you're having a wonderful time. Let's get stuck in again, shall we, to the news and the conversations that flow from the news, which is what we do here on LBC. I'm with you until four. And I want to start with the story this morning. It's been around all morning about the British-Egyptian democracy activist Ala Abdel Fattah. He has apologised for a number of tweets that he sent some years ago that have resurfaced now that he is back in the UK, much to the obvious and public delight, as in his return to the UK is being celebrated and welcomed by no less than the Prime Minister in very, you know, sort of openly delighted terms. The Prime Minister is coming in for some criticism, to say the least, over this. Both Tory MPs, the leader of the party, the Reform UK leader as well, saying that he should have his British citizenship removed and not be welcomed to the country like a hero because of the things that he has said, which include a reference to, well, anti-Semitic remarks without doubt, a reference to not liking white people at all, references to, you remember the 2011 riots, where he was urging people online to go and burn Downing Street to the ground. He says, for his, you know, we have to say what he says for his part, that they were the comments of a young man frustrated with various events at the time. He's apologised unreservedly, he says, for some of his shocking and hurtful remarks. He said they were expressions of a young man's anger and frustration. He insisted that others which appear to show him endorsing homophobia have been misrepresented. Some of the time he spent in jail and in police investigation in Egypt is because he was supportive of LGBT rights. Today he said, I am a middle-aged father, firmly believing that all our fates are entwined together and we can only achieve prosperous and safe lives for our children together. These were, he said, the writings of a much younger person, deeply enmeshed in antagonistic online cultures, never intended to offend a wider public, and was in the real world engaged in the non-violent pro-democracy movement. So it's a question of whether you think the online world is the real world, whether you think these were just the foolish ramblings of a frustrated young activist, or whether you think they should be taken seriously now as he's returned to the UK. I mean, they're not just a loose remark here and there, are they? They're deeply anti-Semitic, racist and even seditious comments talking about burning down Downing Street. Well, the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, spoke to LBC this morning when he was speaking to Henry Riley about El Fatah's citizenship.
This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship. And you can do that. Your Stephen Gettins a minute ago was completely wrong to say you can't strip citizenship. You can, where someone is a dual national. And this man is a dual national. He's got Egyptian citizenship and British citizenship. And you can strip him of his British citizenship under the 1971 Immigration Act on the grounds he's not conducive to the public good. If I was Home Secretary, I would do that today and deport him back to Egypt. I believe, firstly, people should not be unfairly imprisoned in places like Egypt, and it's good that the Egyptian government pardoned him and released him. That's a good thing, but that is different to letting him into this country, and we should not be allowing people into this country or allowing people to stay in this country who express racist, extremist, anti-Semitic views or support for violence. So this man should be kicked out, but so should anybody else who is not a British citizen or who is a dual national, who expresses racist, extremist, anti-Semitic or pro-violence views. We don't want those people in this country.
That was Chris Philp this morning. Emily Thornbury, the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee and Labour MP for Islington South and Finsbury, said this when she talked earlier on to Ian Dale.
I think everybody has been campaigning to get this guy out of Egyptian jails. He was for 10 years being thrown into jail, came out for a couple of months, be thrown back in again. And he was campaigning for democracy and for human rights in Egypt. So people around the world, presidents and prime ministers, you know, were all campaigning for this. And then he was given British citizenship. And so we had particular responsibility for him. The Conservatives campaigned for him to be released as much as we did, and finally he was released. And of course, his continued imprisonment in Egypt, leaving aside the kind of human rights abuses of him being kept in jail, was also a major blot, you know, major problem for us when it came to improving our relationships with Egypt, which is important not just for things like trade, but also really important when it comes to working out a future for Gaza. You know, Britain has to be able to work closely with Egypt, and this continued to be an issue. So, you know, everyone was pleased when he was released and didn't know about these tweets. Now what do we do? So can I just say, the first thing was that about, you know, on what basis was he granted British citizenship? Because you're right that there are lots of people who are granted British citizenship on a basis which is discretionary. So Priti Patel would have had to look at whether or not he should be given British citizenship if it was granted on a discretionary basis. But I think it probably wasn't. I think he was probably entitled to British citizenship, like you and me, because his mother was born in the UK.